already. Yay. I get up with the frequency each and every morning. Thanks, practice gratitude, commence brainstorming. Live, awake, excited, new day, new me. TSA, courtesy of JRE and Scott Free. Too many folks shallow, scared to drown in the deep end. And I ain't pointing fingers, best believe I was one of them. The pain I was numbing in, self-inflicting punishment. The streets I was running in led me to consciousness. Yes, they can steal my flows, but can't block my shine, baby. You see my glow? Now I live in the light, radiating love. Son, you're a star, as below, so above. Am I too metaphysical? Are you over-analytical? So many situations get critical. I'm a warrior, survivor is an understatement. Started subterranean, now we in the cosmos on some Milky Wavy shit. Sun-kissed, melanin rich, health is wealth, we live abundant. Connected with the oneness, I'm off my dumb shit. I bring to you substance more specific, life is synchronistic. All is energy, fact, over fiction when I rap. That high frequency, yeah, we on that. Sync with the most divine, catch contact. Physicality beyond that, high frequency, we on that. Mind over matter, thoughts not. Home stars co-creating, spiral up, no ladder to heaven or hell. Can you leave a trail to higher no polarities? The vibrations they all read.
Day just hoping, going through the motions, staring at the doors, who could ever get this open, till I uncovered the secret to keeping it real. I got in touch with my soul, expand my frequency field. We playing follow the leader ain't going nowhere, that's why I'm living my life with a sovereign mind. All I want in this world is to spread love and greatness to you, using my music for we out of time. So for the divine, I'm doing my due diligence, giving some peace to views that's too militant. Doing it different, I got purpose and position. Feel the vibration, transmission is the mission. Need you to listen to these words, my dude. I swear my third eye got a bird's eye view. And do you wanna sync up? Cause I do. Surfing this wave, follow as we ride through.
All is energy, fact, over fiction when I rap. That high frequency, yeah, we on that. Sync with the most divine, catch contact. Physicality beyond that, high frequency, we on that. Mind over matter, thoughts not scattered. Co-stars, co-creating, spiral up, no ladder to heaven or hell. It's in you, leave a trail, the higher no polarities, the vibrations they all rare.
Let it marinate, cause this is very great. To every state, the burden on my back, well I carry weight. High frequency, high power, free spirit. Talking to the man upstairs and yeah, he hear it. Man, I'm riding the wave, inspired by the days. When we sparked up, that was the light of the haze. But now I'm synced up, yeah, my drink's up. Am I drinking again? Well, you know, yeah, the gig's up. Freedom ain't free, believe them, they not me. The oppressor knows my melanin rich, and I'm scot-free. That means I got away, BS, not today. Stop and say, we good, okay, no more drops today. This the high frequency, they gon' feel this. Still with optimism, but still, I'm the realist. They gon' feel this, yeah, real quick. Bring the chorus in. That's real shit.
All is energy, fact, over fiction when I rap. That high frequency, yeah, we on that. Sync with the most divine, catch contact. Physicality beyond that, high frequency, we on that. Mind over matter, thoughts not scattered. Co-stars, co-creating, spiral up, no ladder to heaven or hell. It's in you, leave a trail, the higher no polarities, the vibrations they all rare. Brother Yusuf Al, High Frequency Radio, yeah we on that. Peace brother Paul Savage Al, you already know, you are locked in, tuned in live, High Frequency Radio. Sync up.
Sync up.
Sync up.
of bitterness and curses. And in their paths, nothing but ruin and misery. And the fear of God is not before their eyes. They have taken the hearts and minds of our leaders. They have recruited the rich and the powerful. And they have blinded us to the truth. Our human spirit is corrupted. Why do we worship greed? Because outside the limit of our sight, feeding off us, perched on top of us from birth to death, are our owners. Our owners. They have us. They control us. They are our masters. Wake up. They're all about you, all around you.
Our impulses are being redirected. We are living in an artificially induced state of consciousness that resembles sleep.
Baby, look at me. Mama love you. And I know you ain't no little boy no more, but you'll always be my baby. It seems like only yesterday I was holding you in my arms. Now look at you now, big man. But I worry about you. I worry about you all the time. Hanging out on the corner all times of night with the cool people. Baby, that ain't nothing but trouble. I always taught you that you could have whatever you dream. Well, I want you to hold on to that dream, baby. Hold on to it real tight. Cause the sky's the limit.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. How's everybody doing tonight? I'd like to welcome to the stage the lyrically acclaimed. I like this young man because when he came out with the phrase, he went from ashy to classy. I like that. So everybody in the house, give a warm round of applause for the Notorious B.I.G. The Notorious B.I.G., ladies and gentlemen. Give it up for him, y'all. A nigga never been as broke as me. I like that. When I was young, I had two pair of leaves. Besides that, the pinstripes in the gray. The one I wore on Mondays and Wednesdays. While niggas flirt, I'm throwing tigers on my shirt and alligators. You wanna see the inside? I'll see you later. Here comes the drama. Oh, that's that nigga with the fake. Wow, why you punch me in my face? Stay in your place, play your position. Here come my intuition. Go in this nigga pocket. Rob him while his friends watch it. That whole clock. Here comes respect. This crew's your crew, or they might be next. Look at their man's eyes. Big man, they never try. So we roll with them. Stole with them. I mean loyalty. Niggas bought me milks at lunch. The milks with chocolate. The cookies, butter crunch. Aviator, Oshkosh, and blue and white stuff. That's blunt.
Peace, peace, peace. Hopefully everyone can hear me out there. Welcome to High Frequency Radio. This is your host, Brother Sharif. Coming back at you on Tuesday, December 3rd, 2013. We have a very packed show today. Apologize for the technical difficulties on the startup of the show. I'm still becoming acclimated to the Blog Talk Radio function, so forgive me for that. But we're going to move on. We're going to cut this interlude and intermission short, and we're going to get right into business. We have a couple of guests on today and a couple of special guests that I'm sure that you'll be uplifted and blessed with. We're going to move on. We're going to start off. We have a very packed house here. People are tuning in early and with good cause. My show today is going to be, of course, on debt collection, foreclosure issues. We have a very special guest, a partner, constituent, a brother and a friend of mine, our brother Latif Kareem Bey. He is the host of Fix Your Mortgage Mess and a very astute, very experienced litigator, teacher, educator, paralegal. I've been in the arena for quite some time. You'll be blessed by his presence. And as well, you got your host, Brother Sharif, coming at you again. We have our priest, Elushua, who will be at the top end of the show, coming in about another hour or so, and we're going to be going in with his story and his experiences regarding foreclosures and law. Rules of the game, we're going to start off first. Rules of the game. Rules of the game are your questions, and we warrant them, and we desire them, and we have a goal to reach each and every question. But keep your questions short, 30 seconds long, and we're going to go in and provide you with an answer. We might not be able to litigate your entire matter or address all of your questions, all specifics of your question, but we will, if not anything, give you direction on where to go to find the remainder or parts of that answer. So keep your questions short. Understand that this is a show that high-frequency radio host, and the information that you get on this show is entirely free. We offer this information. If you listen closely and take notes, you will be able to take that information and be able to facilitate some relief and monetary gain using that information. However, after the show, once the show closes, after 3 hours of us giving you that free information, we become businessmen, parents, brothers, and things of that nature. So we don't do after call work, meaning that if you have a need of consultation, if you have a need for any other services, you can contact us at highfrequencyradioblogtalk@gmail.com, or you can reach me at thelawmaster44@yahoo.com if you have specific needs in terms of consultation. So understand that, you know, the information we give you here is free, but after this call closes, we go into being business people. So just respect that, and let's keep that in mind. I'm going to go over and start off with a few questions that was sent to me throughout the week. These are questions that I feel everyone will probably get something from that answer. And those questions are questions that I extracted from the emails I received. First of all, I'd like to say thank you to the listening audience for all the emails that you've sent, uplifting emails, complimentary emails, and it seems like everybody is being blessed by the information. Of course, I've received emails about people that have done, performed some of the remedy-type offerings that I've given throughout the last webinar that I had. And if you missed that webinar, you indeed missed a great opportunity to go to school. The webinar, as Brother Youssef tells me, it wound up being 7 hours long, which was not my intention. But understand, when I bring this information to the family and the nation, I intend to bring it in its rarest form, and I intend for you to be able to go out there immediately after listening to that information and demonstrate and get remedy from whatever situation you're dealing with regarding and with respects to debt collection, mortgage collection, mortgages, and things of that nature. So thank you all for the emails, the uplifting emails. Keep them coming. A webinar is forthcoming, and I will go into that throughout the show. And we will inform you of our what's coming in the next few weeks. I'm going to go over a few questions for the listeners, top questions, and we're going to dive into our guest and bring our guest, my guest in, my first guest, which is Latif Kareem Bey. I'm going to go into some questions from the listeners. Question. First question I've gotten, and this is a question that I get very often and want to go over and make sure everybody understands exactly what this question pertains to and how you deal with it. I wanted to address some misconceptions based on the amount of questions that I do receive. Affidavits is one of the questions I got from our listeners. I get a lot of emails regarding and correspondence regarding affidavits and the use of affidavits. And Brother Latif, your line is open, and Youssef, your line is open. We're going to talk about affidavits first. And the question was, I sent out an affidavit to my alleged mortgagee or alleged lender or alleged debt collector. And this is a question and a concern I've always had with the use of affidavits. I don't see any particular reason at all, and I see no justification for anyone sending a debt collector or a mortgagee or a lender, or even if you have a genuine lender, there is no reason at all for you to be sending them an affidavit. I don't know what you're trying to accomplish by sending a debt collector or any person an affidavit other than if you are within the jurisdiction of a court of competent jurisdiction, rather. So use of affidavits, if you're not in litigation, to me makes no sense. I don't know what you're trying to accomplish. The only thing you should be sending any debt collector or lender is, if you have a genuine lender in front of you, is a QWR, which is a qualified written request under the 12 U.S.C. 2605, which is the Real Estate Settlement Procedures Act. All right? If you're dealing with a debt collector, you should be sending them a letter of dispute, a dispute letter under the FDCPA, along with your state consumer protection laws, and that information should be directed to a debt collector. Sending an affidavit would accomplish nothing, and what you're going to do is you're going to have your file notated that you're one of those type people. I don't know what they call them. Call them sovereign citizens. They might call you a patriot. So the use of affidavits, if you're not within a court setting, to me, is not productive, okay? And it's very inapposite, okay, meaning that it's inappropriate. Okay, so Brother Latif, come on in and introduce yourself. This is Brother Latif Kareem Bey, host of Fix Your Mortgage Mess. He runs a show on Sunday nights at 7 to 9 p.m. each and every Sunday. This is a good brother, a good friend, a constituent, a business partner, and a very, very astute and articulate person when it comes to things of a legal nature. Brother Latif is going to share with us many things. We're going to talk many things regarding foreclosure, regarding debt collection, regarding cases and things of that nature. Latif, welcome to High Frequency Radio, the Brother Sharif Show. How are you doing this morning? All right, let me make sure that the brother line is open. All right, there we go. Brother Latif, are you here? Yeah, I can hear you now, sir. I apologize. And again, I'm a rookie when it comes to Blog Talk Radio, but welcome. My brother, thank you for joining me today on such short notice. I know you're busy, but I definitely had to bring you in order to bless and oint down my show. All right, how's everything going today?
Everything is just beautiful, blessed, and flowing in abundance. I thank you for the invitation, and I'm glad to see that you got your own. Just really enjoying the music.
Well, I'm glad the music came about. And speaking of my own, it just happened to come that way, kind of strangely enough. I met the brother Youssef on a call. We were speaking, and on a whim, as things happen, as the universe often gives us things on spontaneity, the brother Youssef said, "Why don't you come on my show tomorrow, man, and go into some things? My mind is kind of blank on what to talk about tomorrow." And I said, "All right, well, let me show up." So we showed up, and the show just happened to be uplifting to his listening audience, and after some back and forth conversations, the brother requested and asked that I join the family to provide the things that we're providing, that he's been providing in a different venue and in a different way. So of course I took the opportunity, and I appreciate the opportunity, and that's where we are now. So tell me, Latif, on your show, Fix Your Mortgage Mess, tell me what your show is about. Tell us a little bit about yourself and to the audience, to the listening family, and just tell us, you know, about what you're accomplishing today and what's been your show. What spearheads your show?
Well, for those who don't know me, we have been at this mortgage litigation education and information litigation support for about 7 years, going into the 8th year. And we kind of started right at the time that this whole financial crisis with mortgages started melting down. We start we started with the premise that there had to be consumer rights with respect to these mortgages and the practices of the lenders, and that some of the lenders were not in compliance with the law. That led to us doing some seminars, teaching homeowners, also we start teaching attorneys. And it turned into an effort, a research effort, a continuous research effort to track these mortgage cases, track the rights under these mortgages and the politics that goes with it. So we've seen everything from when the national settlement, national mortgage settlement was started. What started it was the intra-agency review, which gave a scathing review that lenders, major lenders, loan servicers, and MERS had participated in false affidavits, false recordations, wrongful foreclosures nationwide, okay? And that came about because of some judicial states like Florida and New York and other places were getting a lot of traction showing that these false affidavits were showing up in their courts. And in the judicial foreclosure state, when you're asked to prove up or go through discovery on these issues, they were coming up and finding all these distorted instruments used to seize and rip people away from their properties.
Indeed.
So that's what the show has been devoted to. We continue that. As you know, the beat goes on. And the recent politics since the independent foreclosure review is over with and the national mortgage settlement is what it is, and you have the federal consent order all coming out of that, it's kind of business as usual, or kind of a wait-and-see type of environment. There's still plenty to watch. Foreclosures are still at a high level. And now, thank God, homeowners are a lot more conscious now about
indeed.
Their title rights, their consumer rights, et cetera. And it ain't the same ball game anymore.
So you're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. And the reason why it's not the same ball game because pioneers like yourself, myself, Brother Youssef, and others out there are educating the people and uplifting and increasing our consciousness about this particular foreclosure arena. There's a couple of comments I want to make based on statements that you made when you say the politics. And you and I have gone back years, and we've been in this fight in the trenches, and you and I often trade strategies and information and ideas, and we've been successful a lot at putting things together and doing what scientists do. But you said politics, and when you mentioned politics, you know, I spoke on my last show or the show before that about the politics of the foreclosure arena. And some of the politics you and I was able to initiate and able to facilitate in the state of Georgia, which is where you do some work as well as I do. And in the state of Georgia, we were able to galvanize our sheriff's department and some sheriff's deputy, two head sheriffs down in the state of Georgia to facilitate some of the remedies that exist in the law as it relates to foreclosure and property owner and possession. And what we were able to do is to stir up enough politics within the state to now have the sheriffs and the sheriff's department along with the attorney generals come together and provide some enforcement and or defense for many of the homeowners in that state when it comes to foreclosures. And we were able to provide enough pressure that they are now respecting one particular remedy that's available in the state of Georgia, which is the counter affidavit. And I spoke about that on one of my other shows. Why don't you tell us a little bit about what's going on with that particular law, how it's moving along, the progress, and what are you seeing out there as it relates to the counter affidavit?
Well, the counter affidavit is, first of all, you have to explain what is a counter affidavit. And, you know, it's interesting. You started the show off talking about affidavit. An affidavit is a sworn statement that becomes a fact in itself, okay? And in court, you can win a case on one fact. Believe it or not, there's case law that shows that someone in an affidavit, someone did, and another party did not dispute it. Therefore, when the judge ruled, they had to go with the fact of the affidavit. Okay?
That's correct.
Now, so anytime an affidavit is entered, the opposing party must counter it. If not, it is a fact that stands on its own. Okay? So that probably answers question number one. Why would you issue or send a letter with an affidavit? Well, it depends on your intent. Okay? If your intent is later on to show that you maintain a factual presentment to the truth and that you're trying to bait the other side to enter into a corporate affidavit or a corporate document saying that their side is true and correct, that's sort of a bait issue on facts. You know, you're trying to bait somebody to do something. Now, notice that a lot of times, I'm straying a little bit, but I'm just trying to make a point. Notice a lot of times you get debt collector letters, they're not even signed, okay?
That's right.
They're sent
That's
to
right.
you in the mail, no signature on it and everything else, but people respond to it as though it's affirmative that they need to do it. Even the IRS will send you a notice and say, hey, we're trying to check on something for you. Well, who are you? Okay.
Exactly. It's funny you say that, Brother Latif. Exactly. It's funny you say that. I didn't mean to cut you off because that's one of the aspects that I dwell on with the nation is that many times, you know, I speak to clients, and you probably do too, and this is a common error that it's made amongst many people because we don't know no better. We're so defensive. We're always trying to be right and exact, and we're always trying to prove a point. But if you understand, this is why the legal society absolutely and unequivocally kind of demolishes us, because we're so quick to talk. And I speak about identifying who you're speaking with. And many times I talk to clients, and I'm always the one that's trying to correct people's language. I grew up with a mother who would correct you if you pronounced a word incorrectly, or if you just didn't speak with the proper inflection and tone, she would correct you. And I'm sure many of you had parents like that. But when we talk about, you know, communications, we often, I hear a client up there say, or I hear a person say, well, you know, they sent me the IRS, or the debt collector said this, or the debt collector said that, or the state said this or that. And my first question is always, who? When you say they, first of all, who's they? And then who sent you the letter? Many times when we get correspondence from debt collectors, it'll be signed affectionately the Loss Mitigation Department, or it'll sign the Internal Revenue Service. So I ask people all the time, if you're going to sit on the phone, or you're going to sit in front of me, you're going to tell me that the IRS speaks, or that the debt collector, which is an artificial entity, ink on paper, that they talk and they actually have a mouth, then I'm going to say you're going to lose at every turn, because these artificial entities, these buildings, these fictions don't talk. And you have to make sure that you, when you're speaking with someone, you know who you're speaking with. If you get a bill and it's signed the debt collector, you're going to be like, well, who assessed the bill? Who came up with this calculation? And I need a name so I can hold somebody liable and accountable for any erroneous correspondence and things of that nature. Give me your opinion on that.
Yeah, well, I mean, you absolutely, I mean, we were talking about the counter affidavit, we were talking about affidavits in general. But, yeah, that's what it's for, is to hold someone accountable, because as you were saying, corporations are fictitious entities. There's no question about it. They're a creation of the fiction. They are authorized to exist through the state, okay, or some procedure, some written procedure, and it exists as an alter ego, okay? Having said that, but a corporation, a fictitious thing, can't act. So what acts on behalf of the corporation?
That's right.
Some human. And that human becomes then an officer, a director, someone in the capacity to know. Okay? Now, in corporate law, if a person is acting in that capacity, they could be held accountable on the for their individual in their individual capacity.
That's correct.
Okay? So that's what you're trying to get to. You're trying to pierce the veil to get to a person who can have responsibility for the actions of that corporation, and that's what you're trying to do. Okay.
Okay.
So, there's
so tell us a little bit about the counter affidavit and how it is used, and how you and others, including myself, were instrumental in getting this law brought to the forefront.
Well, the counter affidavit starts off because what happens is that in foreclosure procedure, we won't go through the whole litany of what needs to happen, but one of the things that happens is that, okay, especially in non-judicial states, okay, it's non-judicial, meaning that somebody can, without the intervention of the court, they can announce a sale. We're selling your property. We don't like you, so we're going to sell your property, okay? And then,
that's right.
And then go to the courthouse steps, not inside the courthouse, by the way, it's to the steps, okay, and give the appearance of making a sale, okay? Now they come back
right.
And they file an affidavit, a foreclosure deed affidavit, and upon doing such, now they can issue a complaint against you that they foreclosed on your property, and you gave them permission to do it, okay?
That's
so,
correct.
This is what is contained in their affidavit. So when you step into court, what you want to have is the right to rebut. And your right to rebut that practice, one of the things is by counter affidavit. Now, there can be several counter affidavits, but the one in particular that we're talking about that's subject to this conversation is that, let's say you go through court, unlawful detainer or dispossessory action, and the court rules in favor of the party that foreclosed on you, okay? The next thing that happens is the dispossessory or ejectment phase and gets you out the property. Okay, you were in there, now you got to go, all right? So in doing that, the party, the third-party representative, the legal party who is involved in this action swears out an affidavit for the dispossessory. That they have the right to possess the property, and you do not have the right to be in the property. Okay?
That's correct.
All right. This is where a counter affidavit comes in, because it resets this whole process all over. Because now you're saying, oh, no, I have a legal right. I'm in possession, and I have a legal right to be here, and I swear that I have a right to be here, and your facts is wrong. Once you do that, you neutralize the sheriff or the law enforcement authority, because the law enforcement authority is supposed to be neutral in this matter. What they're doing at that time is that they're marching on orders. The law says if a judge gives you an order to go and eject these people, then that's what you do. Even if you have to draw guns or whatever you got to do, get them out the house, okay?
That's right.
But then there's a law that says, okay, sheriff, if you're presented with a counter affidavit, back off. Stand down. Don't touch them. Take the two
That's
affidavits,
right.
File a jury trial.
Jury
and
trial? You didn't say jury trial, brother, did you?
Yes, that's correct. This is a positive, affirmative law that's been on the books for at least over 100 years, if not longer. I know at least 100 years. I know that because I looked at the case.
So, Brother Latif, what you're telling me is that this law has been on the books in the state of Georgia, and the foreclosure dilemma has been occurring for the last 7 years, roughly, and you're telling me there's a 100-year law on the book, and homeowners have been hiring the legal society, the bar association, i.e. attorneys and lawyers to handle or assist or defend their property, and there is a 100-year law on the book that allows one to have a trial. And a trial, understanding, is basically what we haven't been able to get because of the lower courts have been safeguarding our trial venue and making decisions without a jury. So you're saying this counter affidavit, once supplied, once given to the sheriff, puts the sheriff in a position to stand down because you are in possession of the property, and the alleged lender or pretender has alleged that you are basically trespassing in the property, and by way of judicial process, they're trying to do a dispossessory. So you're saying with that affidavit, which is a counter affidavit to the affidavit supplied to the court deeming you a trespasser, this affidavit goes to the sheriff. The sheriff has to turn around, take that affidavit to a court, and the court clerk must put schedule a hearing and subsequent trial. Is that correct?
That's correct. That's
unbelievable. So, how has your success been on this, Brother Latif?
Mm-hmm. You know, one thing I will say this. Foreclosure is a very precise and particular science.
It
involves title issue, real estate issues, contract issues, and then procedural issues, okay, state and federal. And, you know, you just can't hire any attorney to expect to know all of those things, okay, and know them well enough to assist you. Okay, and now you got a 100-year-old law that everybody's saying, huh, where did this come from? <You know>?
Well, you and I always talk about that. We're like, we discovered gold. We're the new Christopher Columbus.
That means the court system, the clerks, and a whole bunch of other people, okay, have been dumbed down too, okay? That means that somewhere along the line, the attorneys have failed at their duty to acquaint themselves with some of the more affirmative defenses for their clients, okay? That's what that means. So it means that nobody has been really specializing to the extent that they know the homeowner's rights, okay? And just like I got off the phone earlier today, I was telling this one attorney that I talk to a lot, and you know her.
Uh-huh.
I said, you know, this is really a land title issue. Most of the issues are evolved around the subject of debtor-creditor and contract and those issues, okay? Well, guess what? Those are legal issues, but land title takes on a whole different complexion because it talks about your, land title is a special category of an owner, of a title holder, of a person's rights that go very deep, deep, deep into the Constitution, okay?
That's right.
And land title holders are the backbone of this nation. Property taxes are paid against the land title holders. Commercial and real estate development is made by the permission of the title holders, so, and mineral rights and all this other things that go along with it. So
land
is a source of wealth, okay? So
tapping
into the wealth side of your existence once you start saying you're a title holder, and this can't be treated lightly. You have to understand, what it is, what you've gotten yourself into and how you need to protect your interest in it. So it fundamentally comes down to that, and when you understand that, you'll find in your state, whether it's California, New York, or whatever, you start getting under state laws and title interests and stuff like that, you find that only certain courts can handle those issues. Now, contract issues, if they're below a certain amount, small claims court can handle, okay? But title issues, oh, no, that goes to the Supreme Court of the United States. That goes to the selected courts in the state to deal with that. Even in Georgia, for example, the Court of Appeals, if you're coming purely in on a title issue and you appeal it from the Superior Court, which is the only court that can handle a pure land title issue, it goes straight to the Supreme Court of Georgia, bypasses the Court of Appeals. Court of Appeals
does
not have jurisdiction. Have any ruling on it. So
that's really
where you want to go. That's really where, when people are talking about quiet title, you got to understand the nuances to get to a quiet title so that you can effectively pursue it.
That's correct. And I'm glad you brought that point up, that the importance and severity of land ownership in any state, and that's just germane to Georgia, is it's a very serious and very very important form of litigation, and which is why the proper court, once you appeal those lower court decisions, that ruling, that jurisdiction then becomes of the Supreme Court in that state, at least speaking in terms of Georgia. So it shows you how serious the matter of land ownership is. I want to transition into another comment that you made, and we often speak about the Bar Society and the Legal Society. We speak in realistic terms, meaning that we give you the raw sushi information regarding those particular societies, because they have a direct influence and bearing on what's going on in the world today when it comes to debt. Now, you mentioned in your monologue initially that you have trained, and you often do, which I know you do because I've done as well, litigation support and strategic support for attorneys. And I know personally that you receive many calls, and you and I have some common legal friends in that arena who we often get together with, and we trade thoughts and we trade procedure and we trade strategy with. Tell me what your opinion is of the legal society when instances like this, where we have a law that's on a book that's 100 years old, yet we have some of our homeowners in our nation basically applying to the legal society for some assistance, for some legal representation as it relates to their mortgage. Tell me what your feeling is and how you feel about the legal society and what's going on today, and tell me where you think the legal society is lacking in information and knowledge, and why they appeal to you for certain information.
Oh, well, I wouldn't. Well, put it this way, I'm just a student of the law.
That's right.
And you know, that's all. I endeavor to do that. Okay, so if someone hasn't studied, they don't know. Okay?
That's right.
Now, if you're out there pretending and you're wearing a title, but then when someone strips you down and asks you questions about a particular area, and you get to shucking and jiving as though you do know when you don't know, then you're doing a disservice. Okay?
Right.
And so people should stay in the lane. So under the field, when I would teach a class to homeowners, I would show them by a matrix, okay, the different titles that constitute Georgia law, okay? Now, you know, you got the Constitution, and then you have all the laws that are to be in alignment with the Constitution of Georgia, okay? But they're encapsulated in 53 titles. Now, each of these titles have chapters, sub-chapters, and then they have sections. Okay? So, what are we saying here? That you can take, for example, I would show people that, okay, you want to talk about defending yourself in foreclosure? Well, you got to know something about Title IX, which is civil procedure. Then you got to know something about Title 14, which is corporations, and then Title 15, which is courts. Okay? Then you got to know something about, okay, UCC, which is Title 11, okay? And you're going to have to know about foreclosure property, which is Title 44, okay? Now then you're going to have to know, you know, about equity, which is Title 23, okay? You know, and it goes, you know, so how many titles have I just called off?
About 11.
Now, when I say no, you got to be, you know, agency is another big one, Title 10, okay?
That's right.
So you got to be able to see these different titles that seem to be independent law things that have their own case laws and rulings, and see how they come in on a transaction. Okay? Then you got Title 13, which is contract law. So what I'm saying, out of the 53, I can easily go grab, you know, 10 or 12 titles that you must be familiar with just to be able to purport something to do with real estate law and rights.
That's correct.
Okay. So in that particular case, you know, you take somebody who's in a particular area of practice, let's say what they call the typical ambulance chaser, who's doing, personal injury. Well, an attorney in personal injury, for the most part, is going to stay in that lane. They're not going to venture out in real estate. They're not going to venture out in criminal law. They're not going to, you know, too much in criminal. Well, they may dabble a little bit in criminal law because some of the personal injuries, if it's a drunk driver and stuff like that, will fall into that. So we'll just say that they're, you know, they're in personal injury and they'll be into criminal law a little bit, okay? They'll probably be a little bit into contract law. They may have four or five areas of law that they'll stay in, but they'll just stay in and perfect that area. That's all they'll talk about. They won't get outside of their domain, okay?
That's correct.
So this is what we realize. If you're talking about family law, that's an area of specialty. So you have all these areas of specialty. So when you go talk to an attorney, you need to ask them about what is your specialty. Do you specialize in this? Or do you have a casual understanding about this? And how much research have you done? And do you have paralegals that work with you? Because, Malik, you know, as the law goes, you and I are paralegals. But guess what? The attorney needs paralegals. Okay?
Absolutely.
To do research and to make sure the information is precise. What the attorneys are banking on is they have precise and concise information, and then they do the theatrics called litigation, how to present it. They have the bar card to talk to the judge at that point in time. So this whole thing in terms of the court system is a big mystery to most people because they don't understand it. Okay? They don't understand the rights inside of it, number one, and they understand how to approach it. Okay? And if they don't have money and they have to do it themselves, they're really lost because now they're talking about them going in on their own without an attorney and then all the games that get played with that because the court system frowns on the fact that you're pro se, you're coming in there, you didn't pay some attorney, and you're going to be bringing up stuff that they want to just do on a procedural basis. And you say, well, hey, I want you guys to look at the law before we move forward. And they go, oh, why you got to deal with that? You know, this is the way we
exactly.
do things here.
That's right. You know, it's funny you say that, Brother Latif, and I wanted to go into that because that's the purpose for my show. Because one comment that you made in the beginning that should be connected to the statement you recently made was it's a very difficult task and the court frowns upon pro se litigants. And we understand that, and there is a prejudice out there as it relates to that matter. But what one thing you said that should resonate with the family and the nation upon this call is that you, an affidavit, one fact, okay, an affidavit will give the court or the judge the authority to make a ruling just on that fact. And when we're speaking about affidavits. In fact, many a time, the attorney's tool is to dodge, circumvent, and get away from the facts and try to marinate you and drown you in process and procedure and information that's not relative or germane to that particular case. So when we're talking about facts, I think it becomes an easier task for our listeners to educate themselves on what evidence is, what hearsay is, and providing or drafting
and
or proffering an affidavit of fact. That's right. What is fact?
Right. So many times in a complaint, you start off with a statement of facts, okay?
That's right.
So you can have a statement of facts, you can have a statement of undisputed facts, okay?
What's That's right.
With a statement of facts and undisputed facts? Well, undisputed facts is where, for example, if you do enter affidavits and the other party hasn't contested, you say this is undisputed at this point.
That's right.
The affidavit is before the court, the other side hasn't opposed it, so it's undisputed.
That's right. So in that particular case, Latif, if we want to get into the legalities of it, once you provide that affidavit of fact, and let's say what would be within the four corners of that affidavit, one is that I am unaware of who this debt collector is posing as a mortgagee. I've never received any funds
from this particular organization that alleges to be a lender or creditor. I don't have any evidence of ever receiving a loan from even the original lender, and let them provide proof. There is no admissible evidence upon the record that demonstrates that this particular debt collector has any standing or capacity to sue. So these are just some of the examples one might put into an affidavit of fact, and that means the opposing party must provide counterfacts or be able to oppose your factual allegations. Is that correct?
That is correct. And since we're talking about facts, you want to have a little fun with facts and affidavits? I'm going to give you some real fun right quick. I'll give you a quick lesson on your show since you got time. Okay? If you give me the liberty, I'm going to show some facts.
Yes, sir. Go right ahead, brother.
Affidavits and everything else, okay? I'm going to go to a series of codes found under Georgia Civil Procedures, okay, that relate to facts and relates to accounts. And what are these accounts for? These accounts are for any account, mortgage account, credit card account, any account that you open up is considered an account, an account number, okay, or loan number, okay? These are accounts that are establishing a debtor-creditor relationship, okay? And in so doing, what happens is that that becomes a point of fact. For example, your bank account. You open up a bank account per agreement. What was the agreement? I will deposit money, which means that was my asset, but I'm putting it into your bank, which means you become a trustee, but I am the beneficiary. Many people don't realize that has all transpired by just opening up a bank account. Now, when a bank tells you, look, you can't open up a bank account over here, they're saying they don't want to be your trustee. And you say, very well, okay, fine, I'll go somewhere else. But when they agree to allow you to open an account, they have a fiduciary duty to you and to that account, so they identify account. So when you identify that account, now you can go through the whole process of validation of the account. So when you think about this is very, very easy and common sense once you understand what's going on, okay? So let's get to the affidavit portion of this, okay? Because it's a very, very beautiful process once you understand it, because now you see that even in the courts, there is, the ability for the courts to recognize these accounts and what should be going on with these accounts, okay? So hold one second there. Here it is. Okay, under 9-11-10, Title 9, Chapter 10, Subsection Verification means to verify, okay, or another word for, and you verify by affidavit, all right? So let me just go through a few of them.
Sure.
All right? And the first one is, what I want to go through is 9-10-11, okay, OCGA 9-10-11, and this is what it says, okay, very short, very sweet, to the point. It says, in all cases where the plaintiff files a pleading with an affidavit attached, okay? In other words, you open up the case and you file an attached affidavit with it, and I swear to the facts in this plea that everything I put in is factual, true, to the best of my knowledge, okay? And beliefs, okay? Now, hold on. Problems with my screen, so bear with me here. This is very powerful stuff.
Absolutely.
After attaching the fact that the facts stated in the plea are true to the best of his knowledge and belief, okay, that's all you got to do. He said, you put this complaint together, and Joe Blow hit me upside my head, okay, and hurt and injured me, and it's, you know, and my injury to get it repaired, the doctor said, is going to be $10,000, okay? All right? Now, that's your complaint. Then you come back and say, you know, you decide, you know, who's the defendant? Joe Blow. What did Joe Blow do? He decided to hit. What's the injury? $10,000, okay? All right.
There you
then
go.
You come back.
That's right.
Without the doctor's note, you say, affidavit said, I swear that the pleadings, all of it is true and factual to the best of my knowledge and belief. Now, you didn't enter into the doctor's note, but you just entered in the affidavit, okay, that all that is said is true and correct. So now, after this is entered, the law says the defendant shall, in like manner, verify any answer. Okay, that's the complete first sentence. The plaintiff files a complaint with an affidavit. The defendant shall, which means must, in like manner, verify by answer. Didn't say put a motion in, and then like I said, you got to verify your answer. To what?
That's correct.
To counter it. See, the court didn't say to counter it. It said in like manner. Like manner is telling you got to counter that affidavit or whatever, okay? If the defendant is a corporation, this is why I love it. If the defendant is a corporation, okay, the defendant may be made by the president. The affidavit may be made by the president, vice president, superintendent, or any officer or agent who knows or whose official duty is to know about the matter set out in the answer. Now,
that's
what
correct.
Have you done with an affidavit? You just baited somebody in to answer you under oath. Now, what is the purpose of an oath, Sharif?
Purpose of an oath is to swear in court proceedings. It's to swear under penalty of perjury that the information
that you are deferring
is true and correct.
You see what you've done? You just baited somebody in and you lie. You're going to get locked up. I can pursue to prosecute you on a lie.
That's correct. So, you know, it's interesting you bring that point up, Robert Latif, and you and I speak about this all the time, and when I'm guest appearing on your show, which I do quite often, and those of you in the audience, you can catch me on Fix Your Mortgage Mess quite often. I do appear there and was one of the co-hosts of the show for some time. But, Latif, you bring up an interesting point when I try to educate and teach the nation about not fearing the attorneys or the debt collectors or the banks because they have no facts. If you received a loan in 2005 and they're sending you a letter in 2010 and they were allegedly the assignee of a particular debt or mortgage or deed or however, whatever the instruments they like to use, which are assignments, then what facts does a debt collector have about a transaction that may or may not have occurred? And that's the language you're supposed to use. You never acquiesce or admit to any transaction. Those documents do not speak for themselves. In legal terminology, they are not authenticated. So you're saying that a least sophisticated consumer can go into court, face a big multi-billion-dollar conglomerate like a bank, and a very astute and experienced attorney, and he or she can walk into that courtroom, provide an affidavit, okay, asserting or averring some facts that are put on the record, which most of the time only you know, because you were the only one, you're the last standing competent fact witness to whatever consumer transaction that might have occurred in 2005 or whenever they alleged you took a loan out. So if you're the only one in there with facts, it doesn't really matter that you had an experienced 30-year attorney in the courtroom. Provide your affidavit of fact, wait for them to see what they have to say, which is not much because all they can provide is hearsay. And you can essentially, Latif, what you're saying, walk out the courtroom with a summary judgment or a judgment in your favor. Is that what you're saying?
Well, that's the theoretical side of it. And
sure.
Be very, very careful here. There's the law, theory of law, and then what goes on in the court.
That's right. That's right. So in other words, you're saying that that's the way it's supposed to go.
That's right. You want to be correct in theory. You want to be correct at law. But what goes on in the courtroom is something else, because you've got all types of agendas in that courtroom, unfortunately, folks.
That's correct.
See, a lot of times when people come to me for support, I say, listen, I'm going to research what I know to be factual and legal. But I can't make any guarantee on what the judge is going to do, or even if you're going to get to the court on time, okay? So anything outside of that is beyond my warranty, as it were, okay?
That's correct.
So what goes on in the courtroom is something totally different, because now you get into the politics of the court. If you've got a righteous judge, an unrighteous judge, you get into all those issues which I can't control. Nobody can control.
Righteous judge, that's... unrighteous judge.
Let me just say this about this amphitheater thing. I want to make one other example. See,
sure.
What this law says is that it immediately says what persons can do, and then it goes into the artificial person. It has a specific clause for the artificial person, which is the corporation, okay? And generally, when the law talks about a corporation, it talks about any fictitious entity. So if someone comes
That's
to
right.
you and says they're a trust or they're unincorporated entity, or they're this, they're that, anything that serves as in a artificial capacity falls under the generalness of corporation, okay?
That's right.
So also you have to understand the tricky thing about law is that a person has two definitions. A natural person or flesh and blood, that the sovereign people like to say, I'm a flesh and blood living on the land. Okay, cool.
That's right.
But it also talks about artificial entity. So you go look at your Black Law Dictionary or any other dictionary, it'll show you that persons, the word is that when they use the word persons, that is divided up into a specific meaning. You won't see the quote book say people, okay?
That's right.
You won't say persons, plural. Okay?
That's right. And you won't see them say right. man or woman. They'll say persons.
That's right. Right. So because it has a strict legal meaning. That's why they're very precise in the words that they use, okay? But anyway, what it does is switches to this artificial entity, and then it gets into, well, the corporation can't act, but who can act for the corporation? Well, it defines it. President, vice president, superintendent, or an officer. It can be a director, an officer, or agent. Who knows? Now, here's an agent. Agent. Law of agency. You remember I tell you had to know about the law of agency?
That's correct.
Well, an attorney is nothing but your agent. They're an agent at law. They're a representative, or you give them a right to practice at law on your behalf.
That's
an agent. You sign a contract with them. So it means you can hire and fire them at will. Okay? Now, agent is no. Well, if an attorney comes and starts saying anything, you can take this law right here and say, okay, you're an agent for the bank. Do you know the facts? Are you willing to be cross-examined? Because this is what the purpose of the affidavit is for.
Perfect. And that's what I teach on this show, is that are you willing to testify on the penalty of perjury and be cross-examined on whatever facts you allege you may be in possession of? And this is how you shut all of that hearsay down, all of what I call the gossip and the street talk. Mr. Attorney or Mr. Bank, do you have any facts or do you have any admissible evidence other than hearsay that you're proffering to the court today? Are you here as a witness or are you here as counsel for the alleged debt collector or lender or whatever title they're masquerading themselves to be? So when you get into the facts and you get him on the record saying, well, no, I'm here as counsel, okay, so do you have any witnesses, any competent fact witnesses to support any of the statements that's going to be made herein? So this is what I'm trying to teach the people and uplift them, and I appreciate your dissertation. My other guest is on here, our priest Elishu. I see he's in the queue, and we're going to transition into him in about 1 minute. And Brother Latif, I do want you to stay on the call and participate, and because our priest Elishua is going to provide some more information as it relates to his case. For those of you who are not familiar with the priest Elishua, he was one of the gentlemen that you probably seen upon the news or the internet, and he was termed affectionately a sovereign citizen who allegedly and determined to not be true was seizing property illegally. He has a very interesting story. He is a very, very high frequency spirit. The brother is most powerful. His spirit is just unbelievable, and we're sure he's going to provide some information and be able to piggyback a lot upon Brother Latif and the information we're discussing here today. So I just wanted to let you know that, Brother Latif, you went in. I mean, brother, the power of affidavits, where to apply them, when to do them, and we also gave you some of the content that should be within them. So we appreciate that. I'm going to bring in our brother Elishua. I'm going to open up his line. And Brother Youssef, I see your line is open as well. Caller, brother, the priest, Elishua, 404-5774. You're on the air. Welcome to High Frequency Radio. My host contains myself, Brother Sharif. Brother Latif is here, and Brother Youssef is on the line. Priest, how are you doing today?
I'm doing very well. Can you, brothers, hear me?
Bro, we can hear you perfect. Stay right there. Stay right there. Well, welcome to the show, man. You are one of the brothers that was able to go into the lion's den, so to speak, with the state of Georgia, where Brother Latif has some domicile, and as myself as well. And you were able to go into that lion's den and come out with not even any slob on you from the lion. So we want to talk about that, brother. We want to get your story. We're going to take some questions. I'm sure my panel have some questions for you. So tell us a little bit about what you're doing, how you're doing, and then, brother, just take the stage and flow into your case and tell us, you know, how you were able to beat the devil and what tools you use. Again, welcome, brother, and we look forward to your interview.
Okay. First of all, I give all honor to my Father, Yahweh, the Son, Yahweh, and the Holy Ghost, Yahweh, and the three are one, brother. I thank you, Brother Sharif, for allowing me to come on your great platform this evening. I thank you, Brother Youssef. You cool, brother. You better call somebody sometime. I thank the other brother for coming on the show, demonstrating how to come into the courts and understand the strategy of the courts and how to navigate in commerce, because these courts are nothing but courts of commerce, courts of equity. These are not courts of law. They basically they're administrating your estate or your trust or your set-to-QV trust or constructive trust. You know, your straw man has many names and many legal terms that they use, so you guys won't understand. So the people in the world won't understand what they're doing inside these courtrooms, which is basically a lot of fraud, a lot of magic, and I can go on about the numerous things that they're doing to you inside the courtroom. The main thing that they're doing to you when you go into the courts or when you're getting into a battle with the devil, the main thing that he tries to do is he tries to take over your mind. Once he can take over your mind and convince you, then he has total control of you, because the word convince means to convict you. That's why they say, can we get a conviction? Once they get a conviction, it means they convinced your mind to believe in something that really did not happen. Yahweh explained to us that for those who escape, the matrix is his firstborn, and the matrix is this fictitious system that they have put together, which is nothing but words, which they do nothing but casting spells upon the people's mind, because that's 90% right. of the people will not read, and they won't research, and they won't study, they don't apply themselves to pull apart the fraud and the flim-flam that they have put together, and that's all it is. That's why you have a magistrate. It's just the short for the word magi. Magi means magic. They just use a magic, which means a conjuring of words together to trick you, because every word that they have on those documents has a positive and negative side to it. So therefore, if you don't understand the positive side of the word, then you won't be able to defeat the negative side of the word. So the things that when they told me that that I was a sovereign citizen. Those are two words that they put together. You can't be sovereign and you can't be a citizen at the same time.
That's correct.
Both of them don't mix, because the word citizen is nothing but an acronym, which is dealing with the fiction, the corporation, the name, and all capitalization. So,
let me say one thing. They use the word sovereign citizen so that they can put you back in their jurisdiction.
That's right. That's right.
That's 100% right.
Right. So this is what they're training their people around the country to do. These everybody that's working in office on the oath, they said, you know, we're going to label it as sovereign citizen, because the media is controlled by the devil. The media is controlled by all of the local European families in these cities that you go into. That's why if you go into every major city, those names, it goes right back to those to the families that were basically having slaves in the first place. And all they're doing is right now, they're using us as corporate collateral. And we're being sold every day on the stock market. And this is how you crash them, because they're committing tax evasion and collateral fraud on the court. So when you don't go in and claim your name or your estate or your trust, then therefore you're considered a defendant, because you can never be a defendant in any case, because the defendant is a straw man. The defendant is the fiction ink on paper. So only a fiction can operate with a fiction, because every state within the United States is just a corporation, because we all know under USC Title 28, Section 3002, Paragraph 15A, the federal government is a corporation, or the United States is a corporation, and everything within the United States is a corporation. So the state of Texas, the state of Georgia, the state of Illinois, or whatever, is all a corporation. It's all a
corporation.
Business. And
that's correct. And Brother Lishu, I just want to add to that, this is why we never accept the term defendant. We are the accused, and we are never
right.
on trial. The law is always on trial. We are never on trial. The law is always on trial. So we never accept the term defendant. We're the accused. But go ahead, brother.
That's it. Well, you know, if you go back to Revelation chapter 12, verse 9, Lucifer always accuses you before Yahweh night and day, because that's what he uses. That's why he uses the tree of good and evil. He used the word sovereign, then he used the word citizen, which is the tree of good and evil. So when you begin to understand the power of words and understanding the dynamic of words, and you'll be able to decode everything that they're doing in their contracts and unfold what the devil is doing today to the people. The people don't read their contracts. They have bred so much fear into you, which fear has a dynamic effect on your kidney pressure. That's why they have you to come into the court at a specific time of the day, because your body changes every 2 hours. And when your body goes through a transformation every 2 hours on the clock, it depends on which organ it's vibrating on. So they use that particular words to send to a frequency to that particular organ, which shuts down a part of your mind. So this is what these people are doing in these courtrooms. They breed a fear in you, which affects the kidneys. They bring, if you go into the court at a certain time, it affects the lungs, and I can go on and on and on. But the main thing that I beat them with the Bible, I beat them with the Constitution, I beat them with federal law. John Melvin recently is trying to try another group that he had scrambled up in the same time that he did us, and I'm communicating with the brother.
And John Melvin is the prosecutor or the district attorney that litigated
John
your case, correct?
Yes, he was a prosecutor that was getting ready to get his judgeship in Gwinnett County. And when he got shut down by us, he lost his judgeship and he got booted out of DeKalb County because he lost the case. And
he lost the case against
money.
You. So him losing the case against you was a black eye and sort of it sort of moved him out of his desired acceleration into judgeship, because he lost your particular case.
Yes, and he was warned that he was going to lose anyway, but he didn't listen. You know, he thought that he was going to be – he thought he had three niggas on the stand, but he didn't realize he had three gods sitting up there, and he wasn't expecting us to demonstrate the type of knowledge we did, and we just waited and waited for him, and we just lured him right into the trap, and once we trapped him, he couldn't go to the right or left. He had to come straight, you know, and this is how you get these judges, and this is how you get these prosecutors. You don't go to the right or left of them. You go straight. See, when people, if you start reading the Bible and you start using that information from the Bible, you'll be able to tear down these fictitious Luciferian courtrooms. And all you got to do is keep somebody on straight and narrow path, as you brothers were discussing earlier. Once you ask people certain questions, they have to uphold that oath that they said they solemnly and swore and affirmed to uphold, so help them God. So you lock them into that oath. You lock them into that contract. You keep them on the straight and narrow path. Don't let them deviate to the right or the left. It's like the children of Israel. They had to stay on the straight and narrow path to cross over the Red Sea. They couldn't go to the right or left because they were dealing with the laws of amity. They had to water on the right, had to water on the left. So, you know, when you begin to understand metaphysically what these people are doing, then you'll be able to tear down their contracts. All these contracts that you're getting from everybody in this industry is a fictitious, fraudulent contract. It means nothing. It has no substance to it. It is fruitless. You know, so basically, when I was beating him with the Bible, the first question this imbecile asked me was, when did I become sovereign? And I said, I became sovereign in Genesis, and the whole courtroom shut down because he wasn't expecting me to say, I filed my paperwork at this time.
That's right.
No, fool. I was sovereign in Genesis chapter 1, verse 27, when Yahweh told me to have dominion over the fowl of the air, over the fish of the sea, over the cattle, and over the land.
That's right.
I told him that I have dominion over the land, and I'm on planet Earth, and this is land. And I told him, when I told him the answer, he couldn't even respond. The courtroom was quiet, and I said, you need to rephrase the question what you're asking me. Well, when did you become sovereign? I said, oh, you're trying to ask me when did I put you on notice of when I was sovereign? I said, February 2010. So therefore, since you were put on notice, you knew I was sovereign, then how were you able to bring me to a fictitious court when I showed you that I was a flesh and blood living soul? So he was just blown away. Everybody looking at him in the courtroom like, oh, man. But then this fool's next question, he asked me, well, he couldn't respond to that, so he had to come up with another question. This clown's next question was, well, why did you move your neighbor's landmark? I said, oh, never move the neighbor's landmark because in this courtroom you have no witnesses. I said, you have no victims, no injured parties. I said, you don't even have an affidavit or criminal complaint from a witness under penalty and perjury.
Hold it right there, brother. So you told them they didn't have an affidavit. Now, let's talk about a little bit so we can transition so the listening audience can have a little bit more information. What were you charged with, priest? And when you talk about an affidavit, basically I hear you speak many times that I need the court to read the charges into the record, or I need to be provided with a copy of the affidavit and warrant or sworn complaint. They never do that. So they get you to accept the charges. They get you to plead that you did something wrong, and they never actually formally read those charges into the record, never show you the charging instrument. They don't show you anything. They make some hearsay allegations in court substantiated by nothing. They get you to accept and plead out before they have to read anything into the record, and off to prison you go, or off there you go to your checkbook writing off some FRNs to pay for absolutely nothing. So I want to know what you were charged with, priest. Tell me what you were charged with and what the whole case was pursuant to, you know, what they were allegating. And then also I want you to go to, there was other brothers that were involved who took some plea bargains and some plea agreements rather than to face the very people that you were able to demolish quite easily. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, basically, the charges of RICO, which is Racketeering Influence Corrupt Organization, which is a lot of times, that is basically for mob stuff. And RICO is just a commercial crime anyway. It falls under USC Title 18, Section 1950 through 1968. So therefore, there's no such thing as a RICO for a flesh and blood living soul unless I commit physical harm to you or your property. Then you can hit me with a RICO charge when I'm the leader of a gang or I'm a leader of an organization. I have organized myself as the organization then to go out and I command people to go and take people's property and extort stuff from people. So the clown didn't read RICO. He didn't know I was raised in Chicago where RICO started at with Al Capone. So the fool did not know that. He didn't know understand anything about RICO. RICO charges is really designed for all those who are working in office. They are the only ones that can commit RICO.
That's right.
Okay?
That's right.
They're the only ones that can commit RICO because you have an oath of office. You are an organization or a firm or an association. That's why you had to That's why you had to fill out your oath of office to uphold the Constitution, so you wouldn't not violate the constitutional rights of people who was in commerce or in business, because that's all the Constitution is. It's just a supreme contract to not to violate you while you are in commerce, while you're in business. So therefore, this fool didn't not know about the RICO charge anyway. He tried to make it stick. He didn't know anything about RICO, anything. He gave us my discovery package was over 700 pages, and in 700 pages, he didn't have one affidavit or criminal complaint under penalty of perjury from anyone. He did not have anybody, not even a bank, saying anything about it. Not one bank, Brother Kane. Not one. Not even a representative.
So, Priest, you're telling me, Brother Elishua, that you were charged with various charges, which was inclusive of a RICO charge for you being able, for you allegedly taking property legally, mind you, and you were charged with RICO and other charges, and you had not one defendant or not one competent fact witness show up to say that you injured them, or you didn't have a bank to come and say, yeah, we own the property, he took it from me, or you didn't have one person say, well, that was my property. So he'd had all these pages, an abundance of hearsay documentation that he wanted to basically inundate you with in efforts to see if you would crack and plea, and within that you were smart enough and you had enough knowledge of the Bible and the law to say, I'm looking at this case and it's just a circumstantial case. It's a paper case. It doesn't contain any facts, any witnesses to support your case. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, sir. Not one person came, and I cross-examined, faced every state witness he had, whether they knew me or not, to make sure and let the jury know that then nobody in the courtroom know me. I never threatened nobody. I never emailed nobody. I never called nobody. I never asked no one for anything. And in order to establish a RICO case, there must be finances. You have to have finances to establish a RICO case. He had nothing, zero. That's why we're filing the charges on him, and I'm going to send him to prison. He's going for a long, I hope he's listening or whoever's listening, because I'm going to send him to prison for a long time. And I have discovered how he did a malicious prosecution. I have the evidence of him having the hate crime. I have the evidence of a lot of things of him. So, therefore, when I'm done with
him,
he's going to be, everybody that's part of that case, they go on to prison. So they better be listening.
So you have malicious prosecution, you got abusive process, you probably got Title 42 under color of law, you probably got discrimination, you probably have an abundance of real injuries that you sustain as a result of this frivolous case. That is amazing. Priest, tell me this. There was other members within those charges that took some pleas. Tell us why you didn't, and tell me why you think they did.
Well, basically, this knowledge and this information is not for everybody. Everybody doesn't have strength and courage to go through and face the devil. You know, if you look throughout the Bible, a lot of people, the children of Israel, always went on the front line, and only a few of them went to the battlefield. Some of them ran back. So, you know, I understood that. I understood that everybody's not going to go all the way up and face Goliath. You know, I'm David, brother. I'm that spiritual David. I just had the stone in my hand to pierce through David's forehead, which means that I was going to crack his skull open and demonstrate to the people that he was lying on the colorable law. That's all you have to do is apply that book, man, to your life on a real basis, and you can beat anybody. That's why I told them on national TV, December 11, 2011, that you can't beat me, and I'm ready for trial. I told them that. See, I told them
indeed.
A lot of stuff. That's why they will not give you guys my transcript in the way that I was talking to them. Because I told them that I was from Yahweh, God of the Hebrews, and I'm here for you. I told them that. And I'll scan and send you all my documents when they filed it. They filed in their court what I told them. I told them who I was. So they already knew who I was. So therefore, the people that played out didn't have enough spirit, didn't have enough guts, didn't have enough know-how. They didn't have any studying. See, this is how only if you want to defeat fear, the only thing you have to do is study. Once you study, you can defeat fear. The reason why they played out because they didn't have enough knowledge, wisdom, and understanding to understand what was going on. So therefore, they played out because they thought that they was in a real courtroom. They thought they was under real law. They thought that they had injured parties. That's why they tried to hold me for 20 months to see that they can break my mind and crack my mind to make me go ahead on plead do 5-1. See, I knew the fool didn't have nothing when you offered me 5-1. You mean tell me a RICO case is 30 years off the muscle, bro?
That's
you're
right.
You're not going to offer nobody no 5-year probation, do a year, then you get out and be on 4 years probation. RICO is RICO. Al Capone them and all them didn't do no probation. They did time, 20 years plus.
That's right. That's right.
So
well, brother, you had already did 20 months, so how can he give you 5-1? And you had already did 20 months, that means you were walking out with 5 years probation. At least that was his offer, which was ridiculous.
Right. And then he tried to bluff us at pretrial. He said, well, since they didn't want to plea out, he told the judge, Courtney L. Johnson, said, well, what does the state recommend? And then John Miller said, 15-5. We said, let's get it on. Let's pick the 12. See, then he started shaking. Then see, we saw him shaking. See, a lot of stuff they didn't want you all to know because he was shaking in court, literally, bro. He knew he had.
Oh, I believe it. I've seen it.
He thought that he was going to get over on us. See, he didn't know we knew about the straw man. When they went in and raided that house, they thought they had all of our information. They thought they knew everything that we was going to do. John Melvin had a book called Cracking the Code. He had that inside the courtroom. He was trying to use that information in there to try to trap me up. And I'm like, how you going to trap me up when I master that book, fool? So you can't beat me at something that I already know how to do.
So what you're saying, Priest, is that most of the information they rely, the two that they rely upon, which I teach my audience, the two they rely upon, one is fear, and the next is that it's threats. It's an intimidation. It's tactics. It's things that usually when you go there, you're 50% defeated because you think you're up against a giant, but you are able to diminish that value and make them a common denominator of basically nothing but idiots. And that's amazing.
Yeah, man, you should have seen the jurors, how the judge, Courtney L. Johnson, had to tell the jurors to stop Googling on their phone because everything that I was saying, you should have seen people's heads drop down, brother, and was on them phones, through the phone, because as I was quoting all that information out and demonstrating that information, brother, they was on the phone looking back up at John Miller like, you a liar, bro, man. On the day one, brother, when we beat all, brother, when we Peter rolled all of the state witnesses, bro, we had five jurors gave him the, like, you are in trouble. That's the look they gave him, and they were on our side from day one. The second day, he kept trying to say, they quit claiming property from themselves to themselves. And I kept, and what I did is I didn't say nothing. I let him keep putting that into the jurors' mind, because then I was going to demonstrate on day three why he wasn't telling them how we quit playing from our straw man to ourselves. So, man, day three come, and when I had to get on that stand and testify, bro, I bust his head. I made him pull out his IDs and all this stuff, and when I talked about the straw man, the name and all capitalization, the name on your document, this fool pulled out his wallet and said, you're right, our name is in all capitalization, and this, and I said, well, exactly. So you're not an all capitalization name, a corporate entity. You are not a fiction. You cannot enter to the laws of commerce because you're not a transmitted utility. Man, those people, heads went down, strolling on those phones. And, bro, when they were pulling up all the USC codes, the federal codes, I was pulling up, them jurors kept going back every day. They wanted to find us not guilty, brother, on the second day. The third day, I demonstrated, like I said, about the straw man. There's no more jurors believing him. Nobody. Didn't believe him, not even the sheriff, not even the deputies. I had the deputies saying, hey, man, can you help me with my house? That's what they were telling us, brother.
Back
and forth, bro. They's like, man, I didn't even know that stuff myself. The deputies told me they went home the previous night and looked up all the stuff that I was saying. It was right there in the law, in their face, and they didn't even know. So
amazing. And, brother, I want to go into that, and there's a couple of great points that you made that the nation and the listening audience need to understand. One thing is that you said is one that that happens all the time. You know, understand that many of our law enforcement and even our legal society, you got to understand that this is a monopoly. So the people that have all the information don't give it to the peasants or to the lower end or to the common denominator people, to the people that's out there doing the warring. They only provided with limited information. Most of your law enforcement
officers really don't know law, and they couldn't enforce law or quote law if they had a bat to their head. But another thing I wanted to go over, which is very important and paramount to what you're saying, is the oath of office, and you went into that, and that's a very important factor that we must discuss. People don't understand that public officials take an oath of office, and they take an oath, and we went into, Brother Latif and myself, what an oath is and why it's taken, and understand that they take an oath to the Constitution, but yet, and I know you experienced this, Priest Alicia, that yet when we go into courts, many times they ask us to swear on the Bible. Well, you didn't swear on the Bible. You swore on the Constitution. So why are you asking me to swear on the Bible, and who else within this venue is going to be doing the same, swearing on the Bible? So that's speak about that a little bit, about oaths and about oaths to the Constitution, and the difference in having an oath to the Constitution and people having this misconception that the Constitution affords you certain rights. It doesn't. The Constitution is for your public officials. Is that correct?
Yes. Well, that's what they are. Like I said, the oath of office is a binding contract that binds them to the United States Constitution, the supreme law of land and commerce, bro. So, therefore, when you are in commerce, and everybody's in commerce because everybody has a straw man.
That's right.
And as long as you got a straw man, you are in commerce. You are in business when you step outside your door. So you have the Constitution to protect your straw man, not to protect you. The divine laws protect you. The Constitution protects your enlightenment or your straw man or your sense of cubic trust. That's what protects you. See, people don't know. That's why you can take them into a federal court and prosecute them, because they have an oath of office to uphold the Constitution.
That's right.
And the state Constitution and the Bill of Rights. So when you begin
That's
to
right.
study the Constitution, the state Constitution, the Bill of Rights, they are bound to you. Anybody with an oath of office is amendable to you at all times. I don't care
That's
who
right.
they are. President, sheriff,
right.
police officer, U.S. Marshal, whoever it is, they are amendable to you at all times. They're nothing but a public servant acting on behalf of the fiction, and that's that. The oath of office
That's right.
is a contract that binds them to it, which is a bond. And when they have violated you under their oath, that's when you file your 42 section 1983 and prosecute them for the injury that they have caused you, which makes you a corpus delicti. Corpus delicti means you are a physical body that caused you injury in commerce, because
correct.
There is no law. They can't practice law. It prohibits them under USC Title 28, Section 607. And remember, under the Constitution, they only have a title of nobility. You don't have a license to practice law, Article 1, Section 9. So you should already know that. So don't no public official and nobody else can tell you anything. They are your public servant. They work for you. They are amendable to you at all times.
And you are the master.
Yes, you are the master, and they are the public servant. You're the servant, and I'm not a servant of you. So therefore, you don't even have to ask. You don't even have to answer nobody when you're on the street, because they have an oath of office. You're not a 14th Amendment citizen, which means you're not a corporate entity. So therefore, if you have not committed a crime, don't nobody have no business asking you for anything, especially the
That's
police,
correct.
Because they're not part of the state, according to the Supreme Case Law 2005. They only supposed to be protecting corporations, businesses. The sheriff is the one who's supposed to be talking to you. And you can go read your sheriff manual in any county, in any state, in the United States. Them are the only ones supposed to be talking to you, not some police policy officer, because the word police comes from policy. You're nothing but policy
That's right.
pushers.
That's right. So in other words, and I have made those same offerings to the show, is that they don't have any jurisdiction to ask you any questions. The sheriff is the highest authority. If you look at most old Western movies and most shoot 'em up, bang bang movies, you will see that the feds usually come in, and who do they go to? They go to the sheriff and ask for permission to do certain things. If the feds showed up at your door, they will have to first stop by, depending on whether you're on federal land or not, and I doubt that you are, and get permission from the sheriff to conduct their businesses in that particular state or jurisdiction. I want to mention another thing, and then I'm going to let my other I'm going to let Brother Youssef and Brother Latif ask some questions of you or comments or concerns. One of the other things you said that I don't know if the callers caught, but I caught it, okay, and I'm sure the rest of the panel caught it, was you said that you quit claim the property from the straw man to yourself. Now, I caught that, but I want you to go a little bit deeper into the significance of coming out of commerce, which I believe is what you were trying to relay. I came out of commerce from the straw man, and I claim by quit claim property over to the natural person, to myself. Why don't you explain that a little bit, if I describe what you were saying correctly?
That's correctly. When we quit claim the property, we quit claim foreclosure, abandoned property. We all know that banks can't own property by law. If you look up on the USC Title 18, Section 1839, Paragraph N, which is the general account of South, the general account accepted principle, they can't lend their money, they can't lend their assets, and they can't lend depositors' money. They can't lend their credit. And we all know that because under the HJR Act 192, June 5th, 1933, everything went into bankruptcy. They used our property as collateral. If you look up under the Senator of 73rd Congress, you will know that the nation is the creditor and not the debtor. Your debtor is your straw man, your transmitted utility. Your debtor is the only one that can enter to commerce. A flesh and blood living man and soul cannot enter to commerce. Only your name and all capitalization can enter to commerce. That's why everything your name is on is in all capitalization. It's in commerce. It's doing business for you. So you had we had a right to go in and claim anything in our fiction name. My name is not John Melvin. John Melvin is not the principal, the grantor, or the beneficiary of my estate. So therefore, he has no business raiding my estate unless I claim his property that was in his name. And it was not in the name of the state. It wasn't in the name of the United States. So that's a foreclosed abandoned property means no one owns it. No one occupies it. There's no occupancy there. There's no resident there. There's no one there. So anything that's abandoned can be claimed. You have to have a claimant to come. That's why under Federal Rule, Civil Procedure Rule 12, the name of the real party of interest must come and present themselves in court. So therefore, if you don't have a valid claim and you're not the name of the real party of interest, then you don't have a valid claim, which means you made a false claim on the USC Title 31, Section 3127. So John Miller made a false claim by using the state as the plaintiff, which is a violation of the 11th Amendment of the Constitution, which he should have known, but he don't know because he violated the Judiciary Act of 1789, when the 11th Amendment made all inferior courts, made all these courts inferior courts and removed all prosecution from them. So he couldn't prosecute me anyway in that Article I court because that's an Article I court. And they wasn't using the Constitution.
That's right.
You was using statutory rules and regulation, which is also a violation because statutory rules is not applied to people. They only apply to corporations. So all John Levin was doing was administrating our state, pulling credit off of our state, and thinking that we don't know, but I know, ha-ha, homie, I'm coming for you. But anyway, that's what the quick claiming property. You can claim anything from yourself because you are the principal of that name and all capitalization. That's your property. You're the beneficiary. You're the grantor. Nobody can claim your stuff. That's why when you go into these courtrooms, you ask for the W-2, the W-9, and 1099 OID because everything is a taxable transaction. Nobody can use your stuff without your authorization and consent unless you hire an attorney, which is nothing but somebody who's administrating or governing your estate for you because you're incompetent and didn't know. That's all.
Right, that's powerful, brother. And I also want to say when it comes to debt, and you're speaking of banks and lending institutions claiming that they lend you money, you got to understand that you can just go to the world clock. And you understand that the country in itself, or the United States, not the United States of America, and we all know the difference, or hopefully we do. If not, do your research. It's $18 trillion in debt, and it's going up. So then if you're $18 trillion in debt, what could you have possibly lent me when you're $18 trillion in debt? What do you have? The only thing you have is me. And that signature, and you, and your signature, and that straw person that has unlimited writing ability, okay? So I wanted to go into that as well. I'm going to open it up and let, if Brother Youssef is on, let him come in and ask you some questions, comments, or concerns, and then I'm going to let the Brother Latif go because I'm sure they have some things they want to ask of you. Brother Youssef, are you there? All right, Brother Latif, why don't you go ahead if you have any questions for the priest, Elishua. Brother Latif, you there? All right, brother, we're going to keep going on. The brothers must be on hold. But go ahead, Brother Elishua. Tell us how you felt, brother, when the verdict came down of not guilty. Explain and describe to us the energy and the spirit that was in that particular courtroom. Tell us what was going through your heart and your mind. Tell me the look of the jurors when the verdict was read.
Well, I knew I was going to win when they had me in there because, like I said, when I looked at my discovery pages, there was no victim, there was no injured party, there was no affidavit of criminal complaint from anybody, so that's a win-win case for me. So my thing was strategizing what questions that I was going to ask the jurors in the first place. So when I got my little 8-9 questions together to seal the jurors, because I sealed them to where they had to respond to me, to where I picked the correct jurors in the first place. So therefore, when me and Jermaine and Richard picked the correct jurors, the questions that we asked, we already knew that we were going to win anyway. So it was the judge, Courtney L. Johnson, and John Melvin was the ones who were shaking. They knew they was going. They knew they was in trouble because on the second day, when Courtney L. Johnson said on the record, for the record, in open court, that I'm going to violate their constitutional rights, she sealed her own faith and she didn't even know. She was a dumb judge because if you don't even, you sitting on the bench, and if people don't know the bench, in Latin means bank. This is nothing but bankers administering your estate again. So therefore,
correct.
They called her downstairs, bro, and had a meeting with her, and I knew she was in trouble because the second day when the jurors went home, she came off the bench and she was hanging out with us, brother, like we was longtime friends. And I'm looking at her like, I'm going to send you to prison. I looked, I gave those eyes. I'm going to send you to prison.
That's
you
right.
Might as well get ready for me. You don't hang out with me.
Bowing
now,
down to the king. She bowed to the king.
Right. She came down off the bench, so I already knew what that truly meant. But those who don't know what that means, you better go study when the judge come off the bench and recognize you. It's on and popping. They know they're in trouble from that point on. So she knew she was in trouble. And when the jurors already was going to find us not guilty, like I said, when we whooped all the state witnesses, man, we beat up John Melvin, number one state witness. His name is Godwin. And he the one who got all this stuff started. Godwin worked for DeKalb County, the investigator. He had two magistrates tell him to don't bother us that we did not commit any crime, not even a criminal trespass. This is what the magistrates told him before he even got that started. So Godwin went around shopping. The law is called shopping. He went around shopping for somebody. He had two DAs telling the same thing. Don't mess with them. They're not doing nothing wrong. And
wow.
He still went past them, and he ran up to that stupid big waterhead guy named John Melvin. And that's John Melvin was the one who thought he was going to beat us. He tried, him and Robert James tried to make a name for themselves, okay, because John Melvin was assistant DA, and Robert James was coming from the general solicitor office, and they appointed that, made him the head prosecutor. So they thought they was going to make a name for themselves by trying to prosecute so-called sovereign citizens who was illegally taking property. But like I said, they never proved anything. They never had any evidence about anything. They had a lose-lose case before them.
So, Alicia, priest, what you're telling me is that even prior to charges being levied upon you, that the state investigator, of whatever department, whether it was a municipal department or the sheriff's department, went to a couple of, not only one magistrate, but several magistrates with regards to you legally and lawfully taking property that was abandoned, and they went with the findings of their investigation and recommendations, and they said, look, we have this gentleman here that's taking properties that are abandoned, and I understand, and correct me if I'm wrong, some of those properties were
were worth a pretty good penny. So they went to the magistrate, and the magistrate said, look, he hasn't done anything wrong. You don't have anything. He went to a couple of magistrates, and the magistrate said, and you know how quick they are to charge us with anything. Okay, so they went to a couple of magistrates, and they said, look, leave the guy alone. He's doing everything legal. So your understanding of the law and real estate law and the law as a whole was tight enough for you to be able to facilitate those transactions and not break any laws. But yet Mr. Prosecutor or district attorney wanted to shop around and find one of his legal society members that would go ahead and prosecute the case just on GP, hoping that he would get some sort of a settlement or some sort of a deal or something of that nature. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, sir. That's what I'm saying. That are we even look, Brother Sharif, we even have it inside of our discovery package that he was warned by the magistrates. We got it. We used that on him and bust his head in court. We said, then you was warned, right? He was looking stupid because he was warned off the muscle that we didn't do anything wrong. But he wanted to try to make it anyway. They even subpoenaed the chief records and deed guy. He even said we didn't do nothing wrong. He said, we don't file fraudulent documents. Bam. So what you didn't understand about that? What you didn't understand about that?
Hey, can I interject, y'all?
Sure. Go ahead, brother. You said.
Hey, what's up, Priest? How you doing, bro?
Who's this?
The veil.
What's up, brother? What's going on?
What's happening, man?
I'm kicking
like
this.
How you doing?
You know what I do. I'm doing well, but how you doing?
I'm doing great. I remember when, over a year ago, you back and everything, and when I contacted you after you went through all of this, because I knew what it took. I knew what you went through. They held you for those 20 months, and I was there in Atlanta when all that jumped off. And I said myself, as soon as it happened, because, you know, Jody Fleischer, they came to me, too. They tried to put me, because, you know, at that time they were doing like a little, trying to bring a whole bunch of cases against a whole bunch of sovereign citizens for stealing houses. So, you know,
yeah.
I was in Atlanta doing my thing, and they came and interviewed me. But I told Jody, I said, those boys need to sue whoever that is that's done that to them, because, number one, how is the bank can't never prove they own anything. They don't even come in court.
That's
I
right.
don't see how you can even bring a claim like that. If you can't even prove that you own a property in a regular foreclosure case, how are you going to prove you own a property and you're trying to take somebody's life and liberty?
That's right.
It just didn't make any sense to me. Now, and what you said earlier about the prosecutor, I just want to bring this to people's attention so they can start looking at it, looking for it in their own respective states. In Georgia, it is OCGA 1711-4. All right? When a prosecutor brings a charge, he has to bond the case. He has to put up his bond. If he loses, he can go to jail or he has to forfeit his bond. That's probably why he had to leave at – that's why I think he left DeKalb County.
That's right.
Because he had to forfeit his bond.
It's two of them, OCGA 17-11, 17-11-1, and 11-4.
Yeah, 1711-1 is when they put a lien on you. All right,
that's
and
right.
You go study the statute on that, it tells you that the judge doesn't have any discretion to tax you. All right,
mm-hmm.
they put a lien against your property, and that
yes,
property is your estate. I mean, this is what I'm trying to get people to understand, that this is all commerce. You're absolutely correct when you said earlier that they're attacking your estate. They're probating your estate is what they're doing, and they are trying to administrate your estate. It's all a money-making scheme, and the reason that they go venue shopping is because they think they got somebody who's dumb, who don't know, and they think they can make some money off of it. And when they maliciously come after you like that, you are supposed to go after them. Now, this particular prosecutor and people on your case, you got them to the dead to the right because you found out guilty. They had you 20 months. That right there is a lawsuit.
Well,
oh, yeah.
We already got the lawsuit on Cox Media. Cox Media, that's why y'all haven't been seeing them do anything, because I got a lawsuit that I filed on them. And, on the news media, and, you know, they shake, and they attorneys don't even want to talk to us, but they're going to have to talk to me in federal court, and I'm going to bust their head because I'm going to prove everything that they did was wrong, too. You have no business put me on your TV or on your program, I wasn't convicted of anything, and you can, and I never gave you authorization, consent to even talk to me on your camera. But see, Jody Flasher graduated from law school in Florida. She don't know I did my background check on her with my crew. You don't know, just like they got a crew, I got a crew. And so I know I looked you up too and study you, and you know
and Jody knew what was going on. Jody came out of my house to interview me, and off camera she was telling me things, you know, that let me know, because she came at me with this word person. She's like, well, y'all out here saying that this word person is a corporation. Now, she interviewing me, and I'm in my car. So I have my Black's Law Dictionary right next to me. And the cameraman, you know, a cameraman's a brother. He's a brother and everything. So I pull out the Black's Law Dictionary. Yeah, I pull out the Black's Law Dictionary. I put it up to the camera. I said, I read it. I said, here it is right here. Why are you? And this is what I want my audience to get in your head. They think you stupid.
Mm-hmm.
They think you don't read, and they insult your intelligence, and that is their weakness. Trust me on this. They think they are so far gone in thinking that the public is like sheep that it's just simple things that they're going to assume that you don't know.
Mm-hmm.
That's how far gone they are. It's almost like insanity. They're like, y'all a bunch of idiots. That's what they think about us. And they'll come and they'll talk to you. And I said, like, lady, what are you talking about? Here it is in your damn book right here. Do I need to read it? What are you talking about?
Brother Yusufel, it even told them in federal law on the UFC Code Title 22, Section 611, the term person is a corporation, association.
It's a corporation.
It's a business. It's your name.
I was in a law office with an attorney, and I was telling him how he said, you know, they like to say, oh, you all you sovereign citizens, y'all talk about the UCC stuff. That's not applicable or anything. You know, I just look at them and I smile when they say it. You know, they always like to try to talk to you in a condescending tone like they are the authority. You did not formally go to school. You're not smart enough to understand this. This is too complex for you, and you don't know what you're talking about. You know, this is their attitude when they talk to you. But I always come back to them with an attitude that y'all are idiots. You just know procedural law. You're studying at law. You went to law school. They didn't teach you a damn thing. You're a walking, bumbling fool. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
It's like, you know, I just come to them with the same way. Y'all don't know no law. You're not practicing no law, man. You're an attorney, not a lawyer. You're turning on the camera. You're a lapdog.
Understand the difference.
It's a difference. So I'm sitting here talking to him, and I'm saying, okay, man, we'll turn it 17-11-1, OCGA. And he goes in his law office, goes and gets the law book, pulls this up, reads it, closes the book, and asks me to leave his office.
You mean to tell me he closed his weapon? His law, his legal Bible, and he closed the book and told you to leave his office.
He said, "You see,
he didn't
want to
have legal intercourse. He didn't want to have legal intercourse with you, Yusuf."
He said, "Well, the UCC didn't have anything to do with this." I said, "Okay, well, what are they putting a lien? What does this right here mean? You're going to put a lien on all of my property, and I have to pay from? And it tells you in there from the time you get arrested, the food that you eat." This is what people understand. When they put you in jail, it's like you checking into a hotel. And the food that they serving you in there is like room service. None of that stuff is free. Everything in there, they're going to probate your estate and get you to pay every hot dog.
And Yusuf, let me tell you what I learned. Let me tell you what I learned, Yusuf. When you are arrested, let me tell you how profitable the prison system is. When you get arrested and you are in jail, and they're feeding you very little. But there is a form that they file with the IRS called a 1099, L as in Larry, T as in Tom, C as in Cat. It's a LTC, long-term care, okay? Because that is a long-term care facility. So when you go in there, they're following with the IRS, getting money off your estate, saying that you are in a long-term facility, and they're feeding you, educating you, housing you, clothing you, and everything else. This is where the other end of money and commerce is coming from.
Wow. And I didn't know that. You just hit me with one right there. I got to go and check that out. But you can, it makes perfect sense because when you're in prison, they make you get a job. They make you get an education.
Right.
If you don't have your, all these different things, you start really looking at what they're doing. You're like, man, this is some sort of, it's not
witchcraft.
What you think it is. You know, it gets you to plea out. It's like he said earlier, to these fictitious charges. They don't read the charges into the record. They don't ever formally show you the original matrix. That's the original charges, which you're supposed to have. They're supposed to show you the original document. That a lot of times the indictment is not signed by a grand jury foreman.
That's right.
You know,
it's a
very, very common one. You won't believe the number of brothers I know have been sent down the road, prison, and they doing time. They got an indictment. It's not even signed. Now the maliciousness.
They show up to your house, and priest, you can probably attest to that. They'll show up and they'll slide you a piece of paper while you're in court, traffic court, or anything else. Not signed. The warrant is not signed. They don't have a warrant many of the times. But priest, if you would just answer this quick question, and then Brother Yusuf, you can jump back in. I want to know the feeling. I want to know what your spiritual state of mind was when you stood before that court and the jury. And let me mention one thing about that I see is very common before you answer that question, sir, and I'm sorry. One thing we have that's a big problem in the judiciary is jury nullification, jury tampering. And this is a very serious issue with these judges who have personal opinions, who have their own goals, their own feelings about things that is adverse and inapposite to law. And what I find a lot in a recent case that came to my mind, I made this example with a friend I was speaking with, was there was a case in Florida similar to, they're comparing it to the George Zimmerman case, and where a mother had shot, a warning shot at her husband or boyfriend, and she was sentenced to a mandatory, which is in Florida, and that's another issue, mandatory sentences. I don't know where they get that from. I mean, that's not law. There is no circumvention of the jury system. But anyway, she was given 20 years just for firing a warning shot because her husband was allegedly doing some abusing of her. And when it went to the appellate court, and it was overturned because the appellate court said that the judge gave the jury wrong instructions. I couldn't believe it when I heard it. And people, we listen to news and we just don't extrapolate the pertinent information that's being delivered to us. And we all know that's broadcasting and brainwashing. But they said the judge gave the jury wrong information. Now, let me ask you a question. What happened to this judge that gave the jury wrong information? And how would that judge be able to offer wrong information when they're either reading out of a book or they're supposed to be experienced jurists that's able to apply the law appropriately? What that case was about to me, and Brother Yusuf, give me your comments after you, Brother Elishua, is we've been having jury tampering. We've been have judges telling the jury, this is what you consider, this is what you don't, this is what you, I'll give you what you need to adjudicate. And that's absolutely nonsense because our jury has the ability, they have the wherewithal to be able to judge the law and the facts. We don't need any instructions from a judge. We don't need you to sway the jury. But how can a judge get away with, just like in your case, how can a judge and a prosecutor get away with bringing false charges, giving the jury wrong instructions, and this judge is still in the courtroom, sitting the bench, nobody sued him, nobody went after their bond, Brother Yusuf, you can comment on that. How does these things happen without any consequence? Brother Elishua, why don't you comment on that?
Well, first of all, I'm going to answer the first question. When I went in there, the spirit that I have, I always have the spirit of Yahweh when I do anything and when I go anywhere. And I realized that I wasn't the first person ever been in jail, you know. So I thought about Joseph. He did 14 years in prison. I thought about Samson when he went into the hands of the Philistines when he was in prison. I thought about Daniel, Meshach, Shadrach, and Abednego, when they was in the fiery furnace, when they was in prison. So I thought about all of them, you know, and these was men of God, and they, you know, Yahweh walked with them. So, you know, when I thought about that, I'm no different from my forefathers. I'm no different from my parents. So I knew how to go up against the beast, you know, and that's basically keep your faith and your courage and your strength in Yahweh and understand that he will deliver you as he delivered all of the other forefathers. And they couldn't beat me with a 1,000-foot pole. So it didn't even matter to me, bro. So that's the spirit I had. I had that spirit, and I had that line of the tribe of Judah inside of me. So I was at them anyway from the time I went into trial, from the time they had me in them orange blues on my head, nappy head all over my head. But I was after them folks, bro. I'm telling you, they didn't show you all a lot of clips about me. I was telling them people what it was, bro. I'm coming for you. You ain't finna do nothing that stuff you talk about. When Courtney L. Johnson asked me at my Feretta versus California hearing to see if I was competent, and that stupid clown asked me what makes you competent, I said, I know everything that you're doing inside this corporate courtroom. And I said, let's go, deputy. See, she knew right then and there. She knew right then and there. I understood what she was in. She just thought she was going to beat me by trying to psychologically wear me out because I'd never been locked up. So since I had never had no criminal history, never been locked up, they had already did the history check on me anyway. See, Homeland Security had already told them, this guy ain't no terrorist. So they had to stop calling us terrorists because they was calling me and Rich and them terrorists. They was trying to link us
with
two Europeans that shot their police on the side of the highway that time.
Yeah.
They tried to link us to them. But Homeland Security said, bro, they ain't no terrorists. They already filed their paperwork. We know all about them. You can stop all that terrorist stuff. That's how John Melvin got the FBI involved. And when the FBI went out to check all those properties we had, the FBI said, hey, man, y'all claimed all them properties, and y'all don't have, they said y'all had guns and drugs. We didn't find a slingshot in y'all house. And the feds told Jody Flasher and them, John Melvin and them, get off their property. This is what the feds told them. Get off their properties. He said, that's this stuff is legit, off the muscle. So that's how we going after him, because we got enough evidence to prosecute them. We got 50 charges that we're going to charge John Melvin and with. So we got all 50. We can prove all 50 without a shadow of a doubt, bro. Each one of them carried 5 to 10 years. So, hey, he can do the math. Do the math.
Right. So what was the look on the jury's faces when the verdict was read? What was the look on John Melvin's face? What was the demeanor of the court?
Hey, man, the jury was happy. They had smiles on their face, bro. John Melvin was literally, his hands were shaking, and he had some other little prosecutor. He was training this other little white girl. She was a prosecutor. She tried to go out there and demonstrate to them. Didn't even John Melvin had sucker her into coming with him to try to contest us because he knew he couldn't beat us by himself. So he had this other little white girl, European, hanging out with him, trying to come in. Now, how you going to talk about something? You don't know nothing about this case, little white girl, little Red Riding Hood. You didn't know anything about this case. So, therefore,
right. We
smoked her like a cheap cigar. We beat him. He was shaking, bro. And Courtney L. Johnson threw down her pen and walked out of the courtroom like a crying baby, bro, because she knew it was over, because she knew that we going to come after her for all of the frivolous, false charges. She knows she got a wrong lawsuit coming, bro. It's coming, and she already know it ain't. They ain't getting around what we got, bro. You can't get around us because that's why you didn't give us a transcript. I represented myself. I was supposed to get a copy of my transcript. You didn't give it to me. They blacked. They kept it into the dead box not to release the information that I have because my case is shut down. The banks can't own property. That's why they didn't give you guys my case. Notice you can
They wanted to seal the documents. In other words, Alicia, they wanted to, and I heard they wanted to charge you some finance somewhere upwards of $3,000 to get your transcript. Is that correct?
Yeah, they wanted me to charge me $3,500 to get my transcript, trying to discourage me from getting a transcript because the transcript is about 4 pages long. Because when I went down there May the 2nd, when Jermaine was in there, remember I was on TV again May the 2nd, and the feds talked to me. I shut them down in the little room. That's how what you said earlier, the feds had to ask permission from the sheriff to come and even question me. That's how I know what you said is true. And when I shut down the feds, because I told the feds that I got a certification, bro, to show forensic audit. I do the paper trail to show that banks don't own property. Man, that federal agent sat back in the chair and said, man, you're doing it lawfully. I said, yeah. I said, if you get involved with this, bro, I'm going to hook you up. I said, I'm telling you. We're going to be in court, bro. I said, you ain't above federal law, bro. So I told him, and he's like, he only questioned me for like 5 hot minutes. He said, I didn't even know you was We need to know. You would say you weren't supposed to know I was here. That's how I know when they gave me that criminal trespass, Crystal Caldwell, Jody Flasher put Crystal Caldwell up to pretend that they bought the house 6114, that house over there in Lithonia that was on TV recently. You can go Google it, VTV, and Google Crystal Caldwell. She gave us a criminal trespass that I was on her property on the 26th of April, and I said, oh, yeah, I was. Yeah, okay. When they sheriff served me, the feds looked at him. It's like, man, y'all done messed up again with this guy. I demanded a jury trial. I did a special appearance, and I did an entry of appearance, meaning that I controlled this name in all capitalization. When I went to court May the 14th, brother, in DeKalb, the judge couldn't even call out my name, bro. That's how you stop them from using your property. So you have to do your demand for a jury trial. I did a special appearance because you said it's criminal trespassing, and I did an entry of appearance, which is deep in the essence, means I am the authorized representative on the principal of that trust you questioning me about. So come on with it. And the guy kicked me, the judge kicked me out of his courtroom, sent me a courtroom aide to this sister, and she couldn't even call out my name, frivoling, fabbling my paper up there to my, who is you? And I had to give her permission to use my name, her and the deputy. And the deputy told me before I came to the door, man, you ain't coming back in this courtroom. You won't stop coming out here. You ain't coming back to this courtroom no more. And they already knew what time it was. They didn't even want me in the courtroom in the first place. Because I had told them, bro, I'm coming for y'all now. I know what you're doing now on the private side. You are evading tax evasion. They're violating the IRS code 7201, 7202, and 7203. They're violating taxes,
right,
bro. They got double books. That's why you ask
right.
them tax for them. They start hauling ass out the courtroom because they ain't
That's
paying
right.
no tax on your stuff.
That's
and
right.
Since you didn't have the 1099 OID, which makes me the principal, that means you just did identity theft and violation of the trust.
And we always say on this show, always, always, always let the big fish know the little fish is stealing. The big fish is the
yeah.
IRS. We don't need to fear them. It's the corporate entities such as these corporate courts and things of that nature that needs to fear the IRS because they're generating way more revenue than we ever could using these bogus cases and municipal bonds and things of that nature. So, you know, I know Brother Youssef speaks a lot about, you know, and we need to do a show on the Uniform Bonding Code to be able to start going after because we're all told and instructed to carry insurance and to be bonded. And Brother Youssef speaks about this all the time, is that we have to be bonded. These judges and these public officials are bonded. When they injure you, just like if you injure somebody with your conveyance or your vehicle, your insurance company, GEICO, Nationwide, or State Farm is going to indemnify you from any damages. So that means, you know, you are that first thing they ask for, license, registration, and insurance. I want to see there, first of all, you're commercially authorized, and then I want to make sure that you're bonded and indemnified against any damages that you may do with your particular property. So these judges have bonds, and we should be going after those bonds when they injure us, bring false charges, things of that nature, when they keep us inside of a prison for 20 months on bogus charges. We should be coming out of there attacking them. As a matter of fact, we should be attacking them in a contumacious way immediately while they're conducting the wrongful behavior. Brother Latif, are you there? If you have any questions for the priest Elishua, if you're there, speak up.
Yes, I do. Can you hear me?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Now, you know, first of all, I want to congratulate him for being a, what you call, a real hero, a real
that's right.
a warrior, a real martyr in the cause of social justice, okay? Now, I want to tell the audience that not everybody is willing to pay the price that the brother has paid. I mean, let's be quite frank about this, okay? I applaud him and everything else, but there is an underlining message that people have to get into their head, okay? And that is, you know, this system has gotten so corrupt, and we talked about what the courts are doing and everything else. It's all wizardry. It's all
right.
Satanism going in those courts. And
That's
you
right.
want to see the devil? will shake the hands of those judges and prosecutors and everything else. They're all cutting deals. They know they're violating people's rights, et cetera, et cetera. So the system is corrupt, okay? At some point in time, by the grace of the Almighty, I wanted to write a book on that because it's this never-ending battle, okay, of trying to get justice from unjust people. Mm-hmm. And it don't make sense. It's the oxymoron, okay? Now, Mr. Priest, you have paid the cost. Time, life, and sacrifice. Okay, where are we going with this? Okay, I mean, it's a beautiful thing what you've done, but where are we going? How many more warriors are going to be willing to do this? How many more families are going to be willing to do this? And what are the alternatives? That's the question I want to ask you.
Oh, that's a piece of cake for me. If you go back to Genesis chapter 1, verse 27, when Yahweh said, "Let us make man in our image," so you first of all have to know that you are God in the flesh yourself. Then you can make man in your image. That means you're going to have to raise warriors. You have to raise people to be able to do what we did. Nobody can just do this because me and you, brother, is born warriors. Everybody's not born a warrior. So you got to be able to recognize who you are so then you can recognize who the people are so you can demonstrate how to raise them up to be upright in their mind. Because you got some people want to do what me and you do, but they don't know the know-how like me and you know. It's just in me and your DNA and our genes and chromosomes. Now, we know how to do what we do. That's why we're talking today on this line, because we are the first line. We're the firstborn that escaped the Matrix, bro. So, you know, Morpheus and Neo had to go back and get those out of the Matrix. They didn't know how to come out of the Matrix. You got to go get people. They want to get out the Matrix, bro. So that's where I'm going. I'm going to raise up my brothers to be able to understand what this is and not be combative, not be a militant about this, but be have wisdom, knowledge, and understanding of this, how to govern their affairs and take control of their life, bro. And that's what it's about. In order to take control of your life, you got to take control of your mind. Yahweh said a man that controls his spirit is a man that can take up a city. So once you get your own self in control, then you'll take an entire city. So they can't stop me, bro. There's nothing they can do to stop me. Nothing. I'm telling you, nothing they can do.
And that's all well and said, but I'm saying where is the movement going? Where is the movement defined from? Where are the other warriors coming from? How is this being galvanized? What's the plan? Okay.
Can I?
Yes, I'm down with scripture, bro. Don't get me wrong.
Right.
I'm down
right.
with scripture. Okay. But you know, some prophets, you know, they went alone. Some prophets gathered, like Moses. They gathered a nation behind them. Some of them didn't do it as such. Okay. And it was all about the timing of their mission. So what I'm asking you, brother, is let's not talk about just the spirituality.
Mm-hmm.
But put it in context, where are we going? Okay, what have we got? I mean, you got Brother Yusuf out there. I mean, are you teaming up with Brother Yusuf? Are you teaming up myself? Or where are we going with this? This has always been my issue because sometimes it's purely a simple matter of survival. Okay, they have got us pinned down to where one household is just trying to survive and stay in their possession, okay, and not get kicked out by hook or crook. Okay, unfortunately, it's come down to that, and we can raise all type of conscious levels and everything, but this is the battle. In the end of all of this, you got to put people in the boot camp, you got to educate them, and then you got to cock the trigger. So tell me, brother, tell us where this going. Where is it going?
Well, everything is not for us to be revealed. So Yahweh, the Most High, was going to reveal to us when the time has come. He's gathering all the people together. It's people that know what we know, haven't even got on the shore and did anything, that knows more information than me and you do about this. So everybody's not going to show up and assemble themselves just because we're on this show. When it is time, it's going to be time. And the Most High says it's always on time. So it ain't,
okay,
it ain't about
what let me say this. You're right.
Mm-hmm.
When Moses I'm going to use the parable of Moses, peace and blessing be upon him, because he's one of the my heroes, my spiritual heroes, okay? When Moses himself was able to do many things, himself even speak to God, himself even go in front of Pharaoh's court, you know, with no fear, okay? But his followers were not of the same mindset. So he was given instructions to take your people out, Exodus. Okay, and put them into a new land. So
yeah.
this this creates a dilemma. Do we stay here
right.
and fight, or is those going to be fighting, or some of us, we just need to exit because we're too weak? I mean, you tell me how you see it from that perspective.
Okay, the metaphysical side of what you just told me is that's correct. Moses had to take us from the old mindset that we have, thinking that we're some fiction on paper, to the new mindset, and that's letting us know that we are the true and living beings, and to separate our mind from the old mind to the new mind, which means you coming into the promised land understanding that you must keep the promise, bro, anyway. So now it takes, now through that journey, going from Egypt to the promised land, Jordan, it took 40 years. That means Yahweh had to wing off all of the mindset that was still traveling with us. So it is going to be a journey. This is not something that's going to happen when me and you think it's going to happen, bro. Because you realize these people have been doing this stuff for 500, 600 years in this country. They've been using these.
Precisely.
All right. So it's not going to be no overnight success. You can gather one person at a time. It's not about us gathering an entire army of people. You do one human being at a time.
Right.
And
brothers, I'll add to that. That's right, and I'll add to that, and I'll let Brother Yusuf jump in because I know he wanted to cue in and piggyback off of one of those questions, and I understand that me and Brother Latifah, we're like brothers, we're very close, and he's one of action, and he's one that always have said, and we've spoken about this, that our nation is not as active as we should be, and when one of our nation people, such as yourself, is thrown in that particular pit, and you are able to rescue yourself and come out of that pit. And Brother Yeshua, I didn't forget that you said there was a lot that of brothers and people that you thought were friends that turned your back on you. And one thing I heard you say that made me connect with your spirit was this is what's your response towards that, and this is what made me reach out to you some time ago and connect with you. Is one thing that always stood in my head. You said there was brothers in there that turned their back on me, that didn't call me, didn't write me, that didn't do certain things, didn't fulfill certain needs that I had in that situation. But you know what? I love my people. I love my people, and I'm going to always be there for my people, and I forgive them. And that was just something that stayed with me. But what I have to say to Brother Latif is that it's happening, brother. Me, you know myself, I'm most likely, more than likely, a private individual, and I do my thing in my way, in my arena, and that's how I roll. But as you can see now, look at me now. I've connected with Brother Yusuf. I'm on high-frequency radio. I'm bringing the information, bringing the education to the nation and to the people. I mean, we have three very profound and extinguished, astute people on this phone, Brother Yusuf, Brother Latif, myself. We're here. We're forming. We're transforming, okay? So it's happening. It's not happening as quick as we like it, but just the mere fact that I am here, which you know, Brother Latif, I always said, I'm not for that billboard venue. I'm not for all that, you know, talk to you and all that other type of stuff. But I think it's time. And if I can be raised from that debt level and come out to our society and our nation in order to educate and uplift, and this brother's on this phone here today, and all three of us, just by mere fact that we're on this phone together, it's happening. And Brother Yusuf, if you want to comment on that, go right ahead.
Well, first of all, Brother Latif, you know me. We go back some while, way back. I remember we was having the meetings in the hotel, and you remember that?
Oh, absolutely. You know I'll forget you, bro. You know that. Come on.
Okay.
Come on, man.
All right. Well, I understand the spirit of what you're saying. I mean, you know, you've been fighting this fight a long time, and I give it to you. I have, too. We've been in this, been soldiering in this a long time. I think, I'm just going to give you my view on it. I done had businesses helping people. I did a lot. I've been on TV, the whole nine. I think that the blog talk is one of the most powerful things that I've come across. And out of everything that I've been able to do, I think I've reached more people in doing this than anything else that I've done. And also it has allowed me to see that there is a change on the horizon, that people are waking up. There is nothing that's going to happen until people are made aware of what's going on. There is no better slave than a slave that does not know he's a slave. That's their first priority first is the slaves, cannot be allowed to know that they're slaves, all right? So first, we got to wake people up and give them information. I go in on this show 5 days a week, 4 hours a day. It ain't no just idle talk. It's definitions of words. Look this law up. Read this book. Look at this. Study this. Get your head right. And as far as the spiritual aspect of it, because I am a spiritual man also, but I understand spiritual principles. I'm not a religious man. I'm a spiritual man because I understand spiritual principles. And one of the principles is fear. Is that fear is adultery with God. If God is with you, who can be against you? So your first thing is whatever this God is that you want to call him, Yahweh, Jehovah, Elohim, Adonai, Allah, whatever, Eli, Eloah, whatever, you're going to have faith, first of all, and be spiritually grounded and understand that this fear is an illusion. It's all an illusion, and if you succumb to the illusion, then you're going to fall into the pit. So it, that thing has to be addressed first. You've got to be spiritually grounded to do any of this stuff.
Yes.
And if you're not spiritually grounded, ain't nothing ever going to work for you. I can't tell you all the times I've been in a meeting with a client, and the feds, they may got a federal case or something like that. I'm talking to them. And then halfway into their case, they just start falling apart. I'm just going to do whatever the prosecutor tells, what my attorney tells me to do. They just start falling apart. The fear
grips
a hold of them so much, I lose them. I can't even pull them back because they just fall so deep into the fear.
And let me say that.
Go ahead.
And Brother Elisha, I'll point out the accolades of the brother, which is I don't connect with any and everybody. And I told Brother Youssef that if I get a good sense and good feel of discernment of your spirit, I'm going to deal with you. If not, I'm not. But one thing that strikes me to the heart of my passion towards the priest Elisha is that he's multifaceted. He's multi-talented because not only can he just, sui sponte, just rely upon his religious belief, he can go into court and demonstrate just on your religious belief. And Youssef and Latif know that. You can go in there and just use that against them. But not only did he use that, he was wise enough and experienced enough to be able to educate himself on their laws, and he not only beat the religious foundation that he has, and he speaks every other sentence he's speaking about God and Yahweh and the Bible and his religious convictions and foundation, and he can just use that, but then he'll go into the law. He's able to quote off the top of his head. He's able to recite laws, and this is why you can't do this, and this is why you can't do that, and this is why you violated this, and this is why you violated that. With that sort of armor, okay, both spiritually, both legally, both lawfully, he's unstoppable. So he's right, and I concur with him, and I piggyback on the fact that we have to start making soldiers. This is why I'm here on High Frequency Radio. This is why Youssef is here. And Brother Latif, like I told you, Youssef is not like us. You know, we're on once a week, okay? Youssef is on here 5 days a week throwing it down, okay? So he has a passion.
Sheree, let me piggyback right on you. People don't even understand Moses was skilled in the laws of the Egyptians, and he was skilled in the laws of Yahweh. That's why he was able to go into the courts of Pharaoh and beat Pharaoh, because he knew both sides. Remember, Moses was raised by Pharaoh's daughter and the Egyptians. So he knew the science and the philosophies and the teachings of the Egyptians as well as the ways of a Hebrew. Check it. So he knew the public and the private side.
Wow.
That's why if you don't have your basic grounded self in the Bible, then you're not going to know how to jam these people up in court. You're not going to know how to raise up warriors. You can't raise up nobody with a militant physical mind. You have to first understand that they're trying to spiritually make you plead out to a God on paper. Remember, he said, they want you to, if you study the word plea, you're only supposed to plead to Yahweh Almighty. You weren't supposed to plead to no man or some ink on paper.
That's right.
That means you already denounced the creator of heaven and earth. I would not tell my, never plead to your ink on paper. That'll violate Exodus chapter 23, verse 32 and 33. I would not establish a covenant with them nor their gods. I meant that. I told them that.
And, And let me explain to you. Let me explain to you, priest, and let me piggyback over what you're saying. The profoundness and the foundation of our beliefs, religious beliefs, is so much more powerful than anything they can throw at us. Because I'm sure when Brother Elisha, Priest Elisha, started speaking in the manner by which he just spoke, there's nothing they can say. And I'm telling you, we hold religion in such a high regard that this is one of the weapons that we don't use enough. Because I promise you, a jury of 12, when they sit there and they hear the priest go into, you talking about all that statue and code, all that nonsense that don't apply to me. Let me tell you about my Yahweh. Let me tell you about my God. Let me tell you about my conviction. Let me tell you about the Bible. I'm telling you right now, it's not a jury in the world that is not going to lean toward him. Because when they start talking the law and code, you know, they really talking a bunch of gibberish. So the priest is going to come in. He's like, okay, you're talking all that jibber-jabber, that triple speak, all that conjecture. Let me tell you about God. And what jury is not going to appeal to that? I don't know what all that nonsense you're talking about. Let me tell you about my God. Let me tell you what the Bible say. Let me tell you about my religion. You did have me swear in the Bible, right? Let me tell you about that Bible that you had me swear on. Let me tell you about that. And you kill them. Did you not have me swear in the Bible? Okay, let me tell you about that Bible. What do you know about that Bible that you had me swear on? Let me open it up and give you a few pages. What jury is going to sit there and really not lend an ear to this man in the way that he professed his belief in God? It's just a rap. I don't know what
you're saying. Now, Sharif, let me tell you what I did to them. When John Melvin asked me why did I move my neighbor's landmark, I said, John Melvin, you don't have a victim, you don't have an injured party, you don't have an affidavit or criminal complaint under penalty and perjury from a victim, so therefore you violated Exodus chapter 23, verse 9 through 15, when Yahweh said to people don't know how to use the Bible and the Constitution. I know how to use it. That's why I peeled his wig back.
Did y'all hear what he just
brother.
Said? Repeat that one more time, priest. Just repeat that one more time. Because within this sentence that the brother just laid down, within this parable, is law, foundation, religion, and standing. Say that again for me, brother. I love it.
I told him, John Melvin, you don't have a victim, you don't have an injured party, you don't have an affidavit of criminal complaint from an injured party. Therefore, you are in violation of Exodus chapter 22, verse 9 through 15. And Yahweh said, the owner must come challenge you about the property. Go read it. It's in your Bible. So therefore, not only did you violate the Constitution because you swore on the oath, and I told them, the jurors, he has an oath of office to uphold the Constitution. The Sixth Amendment says I have a right to cross-examine and face my accuser. There is no one here today accusing me. So therefore, not only did you violate the Constitution, but you violated divine law. Because there's no human being here to challenge me.
Brother, after you said that, it should have been ended. I'm sure that ended the case. I mean, that is just powerful. That is just, these are the words. This is what the Creator does for us. These are the leaders that our universe has blessed us with in our priest Elisha. And these are some of the things that our nation needs to hear. We need to implement. We need to adopt. We need to be speaking in the manner in which this brother is speaking, because it is so profound. I'm sure, priest, that it was not, I'm sure when you said that, and I've seen them, I've been there with them. I've seen those attorneys get red. They get the shivering. They get the shaking. They get the twisting. They get the turning. I'm sure when you said that and you hit them with that bomb, brother, they was just like, what did we do? Because you're unassuming. Okay, I've seen the pictures that they depict when you were in that situation. I mean, you said your hair was nappy and everything. They had no idea they was dealing with who they were dealing with. There's like, this is another melanated man that we're going to – we got 5-4 of them already done popped and pleaded and ran. And, you know, we got this one here. He's being a little stubborn, but we're going to get him. And it's just – brother, I'm blessed, man, and I'm just elated to be able to have the spirit of your presence here. We're going to see if Brother Latif has one more quick question, and we're going to leave the last 20 minutes to go to the callers. So I'm sure that the community, the nation, has a few questions, comments, or concerns. Brother Youssef, you have anything else right quick?
I'm good, bro. I'm riding. Go ahead. You got the
Brother wheel. Brother Latif, you got anything else?
Yeah, Brother Youssef, get me on your show.
I'm on the show.
I hit you up on Facebook. You didn't hit me back.
I think I hit you up on Facebook.
Your show.
Well, Latif, right quick while you're on, you know you're going to be on the show, brother. I'm on the show. This High Frequency right. Radio family here. We might get you to go on and jump the ship and leave ABC and come to CNN, the Morris CNN.
No, look.
You know, me and you have to make this a business, boy. We recruiting newsmakers, brother. We recruiting, brother. We recruiting. Let's sit down. Let's have lunch, man. We recruiting.
This is what it's all about.
We're gonna bring this Morris Walmart tier, brother. Brother Alicia, well, he's on the list too. We about to fly out in the jet and pick all y'all up, man. We about to make a deal and bring this Morris Walmart to the nation. So
no, but I just want to say to Brother Priest is that I really enjoyed listening to him. I really meant it when I said that he's a hero, he's a martyr. Very few people have the spirit of sacrifice. Very few people have the serious mindedness to look at these issues. He's traveling down the path of a Malcolm X or Martin Luther King.
Indeed.
With his veracity to what he's trying to do, okay? And my challenge to him and to Brother Yusuf and everything else is organization. The great leaders, Malik El-Shabazz, Marcus Garvey, et cetera, were great organizers too, okay? So they were able to galvanize the people around them. And so when I say, where are we going with this, don't forget about the organization. It's not just the message. It's also about organizing the cause, okay? But since you guys are braver than I am, I ask the Almighty to bless you, keep you firm and strong, and may he resolve all of your problems by battling your enemies and granting you untold victory over your opponents.
Indeed, Islam, amen. Brother, we're gonna have you back on because I want you to talk about something that might be near and dear to Yusuf's heart and to some things that you're doing. I heard Yusuf mention on his show yesterday as I listened in while I was doing some work, and Brother Yusuf was speaking about what is a U.S. citizen and what determines or what dictates one to be a nation. And one of the elements of that was currency. And I do know, and I'll have you come back and schedule you to come back and tell the listening audience and the nation over here, High Frequency Radio, what you're doing to create that currency for either yourself, your people, your followers, and your nation, where you're doing something with commodities and things of that nature. This is very profound and germane to a lot of the things that Yusuf is bringing on the other side, on the non-tyrannical issues. So I want to have you back to be able to give us a show on that, on how to stop using, because as Yusuf says, there's that minimum contact issue that we're using their money, we're using their securities, we're using their energy, we're using their benefits, but we're still on the other side contemporaneously trying to establish some sovereignty. We can't be sovereign unless we have our own currency.
For another day, because when you talk about sovereign, it's not just an empty word. It means a lot. It means your conduct and everything else is headed in that direction. It can't be partial. Okay?
That's right.
Or they won't coin you as sovereign citizen because you haven't done your due diligence.
That's right.
That's right.
So we're going to have you back on that, brother. And of course, I love you, and we love you here at the family. And this is going to be something that's going to be ongoing and constant. Getting our three great minds on this call should be a boost of confidence for the nation and for the community out there. And I've definitely had my spirit rejuvenated over just being on the call with such great minds. But we're going to go to the caller board. We have a lot of callers here. I'm sure we have a lot of questions, and we're going to get to them. I only see about six or seven hands up, but we're going to go first to Virginia, 757-4586. All of my panel, please stay on because there may be some questions geared toward the priest or Brother Latif or even Brother Yusuf. So I'm going to open up 757-4586. You're on High Frequency Radio. State your name, where you're calling from, your question, comment, or concern. 4586. All right. We're going to go to question and call are 614-2324. 614-2324. You're on High Frequency Radio. What's your question, comment, or concern? 2324. All right.
Hello, can you hear me?
Okay, yes, I can hear you. Yes, sir.
Okay, yeah, I got a quick question. I'm calling from Columbus, and this is LeVar.
Okay, LeVar, I believe I received the email from you, right?
Right, yeah.
Right, I remember good names. Welcome, brother, and I did request that you come on the show and ask your questions. How can we help you today?
Yeah, I got a situation where, we're actually kind of current, like on our mortgage or whatever, but a new person came in. I guess they bought our loan, and I was wondering, like, what would be the route to, like, go after that? Like, is it a debt validation letter or something like that?
Okay. Well, it all depends on your circumstances, and I'll let, you know, since you guys often hear from me, I'm going to let the priest come in because he's aware. He's in the securitization auditing arena, such as I have been and was for quite some time, and we're pretty experienced and as well in that particular arena. But what you have to do some research of your entire alleged loan history. So you have to see when they acquired the loan, what type of instrument was used, whether an assignment, a successor in interest, meaning that maybe the bank went out of business and they were bought out by a particular bank. So you need to really conduct some research, and that may include or may not include some securitization auditing if you have some indication that it was sold into the secondary market. So you need to look at your instruments, see what was filed or what was not filed. As you know, with any genuine mortgage, okay, and you understand that I have totally differentiated between the Halloween mask that these pretender lenders have been wearing,
right,
and what the actual face of them are, which is debt collectors, which governs them under a different set of laws. But you have to look and see what instrument that was used. If you see an assignment and you said you're current, so they can still fall under the FDCPA depending on how that instrument was sold. But your mortgage, your deed of trust, or your security deed has provisions in it that which are called conditions precedent that has to give you notice of any sale, partial sale, or sale of your alleged note or any parts of that note. So in other words, you have to be noticed of every particular change or transfer in any servicing rights or any ownership, and you can find that under 15 U.S.C. 1641, which is going to be the Dodd-Frank Act. You have to be notified of any transfer. So once you determine how it was transferred, when it was transferred, and then determine who was transferred to. Okay, so I explained to you quite clearly that debt collectors are doing a lot of buying of servicing rights. Okay, this is where this field is becoming so inundated and so rich, meaning that we don't know the difference. But you have mom and pop collection companies now getting into servicing because the servicers are sort of backing out because they're tired of getting sued. Your big servicers, your BAC home loans and things of that nature, your Chases, you know, they're getting sued a lot. So they're passing off the buck to little mom and pop, you know, unsophisticated debt collectors and having them do the alleged servicing. So, brother, there's no specific answer to that, but if you're current, what I would do is to send them a communication under the 12 U.S.C. 2605, the rest of us, send them a QWR, and ask the questions. Don't be sophisticated. Ask the questions. I want to know, give me a history of this loan. Give me a title history. Tell me, you know, when the loan was transitioned, who, where, what, why. Give me an escrow analysis. You know, give me all that. I want to know what's going on with my loan since inception. And ask those questions, and ask them in your own words. This is one thing I'm trying to teach our nation. Stop trying to use their language. Use your own language. Speak clearly and ask for what you want. Stop thinking you can't draft a letter, you can't draft a communication, you can't draft a writ. It's easy. You've written love letters before, right, brother? That's all it is. It's emotions on paper, all right?
Right.
Brother Alicia, can you answer that question for the brother and ask what is your take on how he should handle something like that?
Well, brother, you gave him everything. You know, it's just
You give him everything that he needs to fight with, man. That sums it all up. We have to stop using their language. Remember, they're casting spells. They cast him a spell. They put what's on there that they understand, and that's what they gave him. You see what I'm saying? So I would – when you're doing – can you hear me?
Yes. Yes, we can.
Yeah. Okay. What the homeowners are not doing is they're not filing the tax papers. And the tax, like I said, everything is a taxable transaction. You were supposed to file your 1099-A, which is an acquisition of abandonment, to claim the loan, and you were supposed to file your 1099-C to cancel out the loan.
Right.
Okay? Yes, that cancels out the debt. So, therefore, the reason why they're saying you're defaulting or you get ready to default or you become a delinquent is because you have not claimed your loan. You are the principal. You're the grantor. You're the beneficiary of that promissory. That loan, so you got to claim that stuff. Stop fighting over the house and stop focusing on the security. It's no longer a loan. That's why when you sign that promissory note, it gets securitized, monetized, put into the prudent service agreement, which falls under the REMIC, which is a real estate mortgage investment conduit, which means thousands of investors have took and bought a piece of your loan. That means that the bank doesn't have the promissory note no more, so stop asking for the promissory note and begin to ask for the securities. Because when you do a forensic audit and you do your Bloomberg screenshots, it pulls up your it pulls up all your information. It shows you that your stuff is being sold on the stock market as a security, which makes it an investment. And when you have a audit done, the audit will show you the cutoff date and the closing date. Once you have a cutoff date and closing date, bro, you cannot go back into the PSA and get a loan out of there. That would be a violation of the Prudent Service Agreement 2.01.
That's correct. And he laid it down, and what the way he explained it was the way I try to relay this and proffer it to the nation, is that you have to understand when these transitions occur, because when these transitions occur, there are different laws and different communication methods that you must obtain or you must basically adopt to be able to communicate. So in other words, when you get a mortgage or you get a loan, well, they fall under a creditor status. But then once they sell it into the secondary market, like the priest Alicia said, well, now it becomes a security. So there's a language that you must use, specifically the UCC, to deal with securities. Okay, well, let's say that they sold the loan or transferred or assigned the loan while it's in default. Well, there's another legal transition. Now they transition into the laws governing the FDCPA and your state consumer protection laws, 15 U.S.C. 1692. They are no longer creditors now. They are debt collectors. So we have to put our minds around these different transitions and read the correspondence that we get. And many times they tell us this. You know, I don't know how many times, and Brother Latif would know this, how many times we do, you know, go over, research a client's case and go over it, and there's documentation right in their face that says, did you not read that the lender became the servicer sort of soon after you finished or executed the transaction? Do you not understand that their role changed from the lender to a servicer? Do you understand that transition is significant and it determines what kind of communication and language you have when speaking with them? This is what we have to be conscious of. So, brother, hopefully that answered your question, but you know you can always send me an email. And again, I thank you for your emails and your communication, and we're going to go on to the next to the next call. All right? Thank you, brother. All right. We're going to go over to 412-412-1568. Caller, you're on High Frequency Radio. Do you have a question, comment, or concern?
Brother Sheree, you are that guy. Can you hear me? Hello?
Yes, sir, I can hear you.
Can you hear me?
Yes, sir.
Man, I'm telling you what, I see a lot of people, they bow down to the queen, and I understand why they bow. You are that guy. You took all you guys, man. I tell you what, your shows are all that, because I give all you guys a middle name, Tugman. I call Yusuf Tugman L, you know, because you guys are freeing us. You know, you're freeing us physically and mentally, because it's like a breath of fresh air just to, you know, to know that we can be a much freer than what we are if we just read. But it's just reading, because myself, if I just pick up a book and just read it, I basically would not understand it, okay? I have to either go to a lecture first or I have to look at a video and then read, because then I have understand the terminology of what's being spoken about. But blind reading, and you don't know the words and you don't know how to identify various subject matters, it's hard. But you guys lecturing first and say, hey, go read this. Hey, go read that. You know, then you have an understanding. You know the path that you're on as you're reading, as opposed to just picking up a book and reading blindly. And one of the questions
not to interfere with your wisdom, brother, state your name for the record and tell us who you are and where you're calling from.
I'm from Pennsylvania.
Okay.
And I call myself the perfect black. That's what I call myself.
All right. Good enough, brother. All right. Go ahead with your question.
That's what I call myself. Well, you had spoke about the Fair Debt Collection Practicing Act. You had spoken about it and the definition of, I think you said a consumer, and it was
1692A3.
It says a natural person, all right?
That's right.
That's what it says. Am I correct? All right, but when they bring these foreclosure cases, they bring a legal fiction. So...
Right. Well, when I speak about a consumer under 15 U.S.C. 1692 A3, the consumer pertains to you, not to the banking industry, not to the banking, the National Banking Association. So they can be an artificial entity. The FDCPA protects you as a consumer, not the artificial corporation. So I just wanted to make that clear with you. So anytime you're communicating with them, you're the consumer. Okay.
Okay. That's what I understand. But when they bring a complaint, they have a legal fiction down there as opposed to a natural person. So,
right, because the natural person applies to the consumer, not the creditor or the debt collector. The debt collector can be, in some cases, a natural person, like a landlord would be considered a natural person, but the debt collector can be an artificial entity. That's why I'm saying I want to make sure you understand consumer means you, the consumer.
That.
Okay.
I understand that. I understand it, but when they bring these complaints, they bring it corporation against corporation. It's like Bank of America versus all capital names. That's corporation against corporation. So the natural person that was sitting in that closing that signed those documents is not the same entity on that complaint.
Okay. Well, when you say corporation against corporation, what do you mean? If they're suing you for foreclosure, it's going to be a bank against a natural person, or if you've put your property into some sort of asset protection, a LLC, a trust, or something of that nature, statutory entity, then it would be a corporation against a corporation. But that wouldn't be a complaint under the FDCPA. That would be a foreclosure, a in-rem action is what it's considered legally, action in equity. It all depends. But there's always going to be a corporation at the other end of a foreclosure, and the other end, plaintiff or defendant, is going to always be some sort of artificial entity, a bank or something of that nature.
Let me interject real quick. The qualifying term there is natural person. Why don't they just don't say citizen or human being, or why do they have to keep using this word natural person? Because they always got to keep referencing some type of person, okay? Because a natural person is a derivative of the word person, which is a fictitious entity, and when you talk about public and private. Everything on the public side is titles. Everything on the public side is titles. Only the private side has real living people. Now, one thing that you have to understand is they got a compelling state interest to keep all this secret from the general public. They're not trying to let you know all this stuff. This word natural person is a relatively new creation that they came up with, too.
Right.
Word natural person, they coined this phrase and everything, but it's a derivative of the word person, and person comes from a persona. It's not a mask that actors would wear it back in Roman times. It's your personality. It's not who you really are. It's the mask that you wear when you come out into the public as an actor or whatever capacity that you are appearing in. It's just person. Now, they have to have something to connect you, because he's absolutely right. It's referencing you as a real living soul. Now, I don't know why this is so important to you, but at the end of the day, it is not per se a real person on that caption of that pleading. That all caps of the name is a fictitious entity. It is. They call it, whether they call it a natural person, a person, or whatever. It's a fictitious, if you want to call it an Ensley Chief, a nom de guerre, or, you know, a franchise, straw man, you know, all these different phrases that people have coined for it. It is a fictitious entity. Now, if you want to get into constructive trust, because it's a constructive trust is what it is. It's a, you know, when you look up the word constructive trust, it's a constructive trust. You have two types of trust, a resultant trust and a constructive trust. And it's a constructive trust in equity, because trust law can only be performed in equity, solely in equity.
Okay.
All right.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Okay, I understand now, because I'm thinking a natural person means a natural human being, but whatever they put in front of person is
no, no, that's why he tried to break it down with you, because you have to understand that whatever term you put in front of the word person does not change the dynamic and the meaning of the word person. You can say ignorant person, natural person, black person, white person. They're still referring to an artificial person with the word in itself, person. It's like when they say individual, for pursuant to the IRS, an individual has a specific meaning, a description, and character. So understand that the word person, okay, defines a specific type. So I don't care what they put in front of the word person, it's still an artificial entity.
It's an artificial entity.
Okay.
They're just trying to reference a particular type of person. Yeah.
Okay, great. Did I answer your question, brother? We have a minute left.
Barry Sanders. I'm like, you guys are here. Okay, then.
Right.
Yeah, I'm sure.
No, you can stay on, brother. You can stay. I just want to let the callers know that we have a minute left in the live stream. Our call is going to continue after the live stream cuts off. We're going to continue going. But if you want to continue with questions in our show, you can do so. You need to call in the 424-222-5250 right now in order to continue. But we're going to move on, brother. Hopefully that answered your question. I'll take your emails as well. Okay, good, brother. All right. We're going to go to the next caller here, and we're about to cut off again in the next 30 seconds. So let's go to
Brother Sharif, it don't cut off in 30 minutes and go into overtime. What cuts off is the stream. All right,
gotcha.
So they won't be able to hear us on the Internet. So if they want to call in, they can call in at 424-222-5250. And you got another hour to continue the show if you want to, but you can just wrap
good.
Up, okay? Okay.
Good. Hopefully we'll get in. Priest Alicia, are you still there? Are you still good, brother?
I'm still right here.
Okay, brother. We're going to take the next call. Call us StadDog1. StadDog1. You're on High Frequency Radio. State your name and your question, comment, or concern.
It's King Stacy L, brother. Calling from the Michigan Republic. Me and my family.
Yes, sir. Welcome.
I know we're going to do this show, man. This show here is like the best song I've ever heard, man. Y'all on fire.
Peace.
That's all I got to say. I ain't got no question, bro. I ain't even know
that
I was.
Man, that show just fire. Go ahead, brother.
No, I didn't know I was on the queue, bro.
Yeah, you was in the queue, but we appreciate your comments, man, and all comments, man, given to us, we take and absorb into our spirit, so we appreciate it. We're trying to uplift the nation, and we're glad you got something out of it, brother, and continue to tune in with us 5 days a week here. But we appreciate you, man, and if you have any issues that we need to know about, High Block Talk Radio, High Frequency Radio Blog Talk at gmail.com, get on the mailing list. And for any future upcoming events, and just to let the callers know, the brother Alicia and I are going to be teaming up to do a webinar, and it's going to be forthcoming. We will let you know when that occurs, but I figure we get more bang for buck. Of course, I'll do my individual webinars, but I figure with the knowledge that brother Alicia has, and for those of you that want to obtain more knowledge and be able to adopt some of his language and verbiage, we're going to do a webinar that will be explosive.
Thank you.
Okay, brother. Thank you for calling in. All right, we're going to go to the caller from 202, ending in 7781. 202-7781. You're on High Frequency Radio. State your name, where you're calling from, and your question, comment, or concern.
Peace. This is the Don David Michael calling on Florida.
Peace, Brother Michael. Welcome, brother. How you doing?
All right. Yeah, pretty good, man. Appreciate the show big time. All the information coming through, y'all. I wanted to say to, I guess it's the older gentleman on the line is, I just want to kind of touch on. Yeah, yes, correct.
Okay.
I mean, I guess I'm considerably new coming into this. However, I was geared for it once I hit the spiritual thing first, you know, but I was geared for this thing. And, you know, we have to have y'all, and it is going to be a slower thing. But if you look at everything else, everything is passing through everyone's hands. So, like, the objective is going to get to us so fast if the ones that are at least interested somewhat, you know, are really listening, are really reading, are really just tuned in to the vibe, you know.
That's true.
It's going to get there so much quicker. It seems slow, but everyone I run into is directly only, like, interested in what I have to talk about. So I know I'm on the right thing, you know.
That's
I'm
right.
On that thing, and it's just coming. I'm getting nothing but good results. So
good, brother.
That's
what are you speaking about? What are you speaking about?
With the law, with just living your life, like, privately, like, it's a certain, if you don't have any problems if you really are living that way.
That's right.
I mean, I'm not experiencing that. I don't have any problems with anybody, you know.
That's good.
And,
tell me, brother, what comments or compliments you would have towards my guest, the priest Elishua. What would you say to him? What would you ask him if he had to give you something? What would it be?
Wait, can you repeat the question?
I said, what would you ask of the priest if he had to give something to you, or what compliments or sentiments would you have towards this esteemed guest?
Oh, I just have nothing but the best to say. I like the whole vibration. I don't ask for nothing. I just, man, I appreciate the time, because the time is y'all's money. So, I mean, you know, I just appreciate all the words and anything y'all have to say about any of the questions coming in, man. I see y'all as this is kind of what it seems to me is like almost a mystery school in a way. I don't mean to get too metaphysical about it, but it seems that, you know what I'm saying, it seems like all of y'all have y'all trains of thought. Like, the first person that came into law, metaphysics, whatever, was a brother named Panic, and his school just hit me the right way, like his time, you know, his philosophy. But how y'all all are just, it's like lords up there, you know what I'm saying?
Wow.
And
Priest Alicia, why don't you give the brother some insight? Seems like he's on the metaphysical path, on the spiritual path. Would you have any words to offer this caller to encourage him to stay on that path, or what words would you have from this brother that appears to be on the right track, on the right avenue?
Well, the basic thing, like I would tell him, all the power is in metaphysics. You know, the word meta means beyond the physical. So you have to always go beyond the physical, because it's not physical, it's all spiritual. And if people want to really start, like I said, tearing down their cases, they need to study the name Yahweh, and then they'll be able to understand everything that has been created in this universe and how to overturn whatever Satan has put on the universe, because Satan is carnal-minded, he's physical. So when you begin to understand the name and begin to understand how to go into everything metaphysically, like the brother Sam, you have to go from the mind first, because everything starts in the mind, and then it becomes tangible versus intangible, then it becomes tangible. So therefore, it all starts inside of the mind. Everything that we're seeing that's going on right now came out of somebody's mind. So therefore, Yahweh put it in their mind to be able to to create these things, to put it out here on a physical realm so we can enjoy it. So you have to go metaphysical first to understand the spiritual side to get to the physical. So that's what I would just say. Stay metaphysically thinking, because everything is spiritual, bro. Trust me. Just like Yusuf El said, it's a spiritual thing. It's not a religion thing. It's not a traditional thing. It's a spiritual thing, bro.
That's right. Oh, yeah. And understanding and speaking on that, brother, and I make one more of a comment, you have to understand that everything that goes on in these courts, these particular individual judges and jurists and prosecutors, they all have their own beliefs. There is no uniform and no costume in the world that you could put on that gives you authority or dominion over another man. There is nothing that you got to understand. There was a case where, you know, these judges, they have their own personal and religious beliefs. There was a case where there was a melanated woman that was trying to change her son's name to Messiah. And the judge told her, under no uncertain terms, that
you can't name your son Messiah. That's reserved for some sort of a religious a person. I mean, and it was just unbelievable. And I, you know, and as many examples of these type things, you got to understand that they're Catholics that are in these uniforms, that are in these costumes and uniforms and robes. I mean, there are pedophiles. Okay, they have pedophilia type behavior. There was jurists that was doing atrocious things. We understand they put those uniforms on with their own personal beliefs and prejudices.
They do. Let me chime in on that Messiah thing with the child. The judge was not incorrect in saying that, because publicly, that's a corporation. That's like when you go and get a corporate name, like when you go and incorporate a company, you got to do a name check first, make sure nobody else has that name, doing business under that name, or that name is not reserved. Privately, you can call yourself whatever you want to call yourself.
That's right. That's true.
But publicly, if you're going to register this name legally, in our system and everything, they have some say-so over that particular process. So I just wanted to make that clear. That's one of the distinguishing differences between public and private, which is another. I don't really too much condone legal name changes, because it's not.
That's right.
It doesn't make any difference if, you know, it's like I left my regular name. My name is Yusuf Vail, but my American name, I left it what it was. That ain't nothing but a corporation to do business under.
That's
I want to do business under that name or not. But privately, I call myself, that's my business. Nobody tells me what to call myself in my private class.
That's
my business.
And understand that there's a law that supports even, you don't have to go to these particular courts to do a legal name change. There is a common law name change, and there is plenty of case law out there for those of you that think you must go and spend $200 and $300 and place your name in a newspaper in order to change your appellation or your name. There is common law name change that is legal and lawful for you to do without going to a court to ask for permission. In fact, you can sue in any name that you want, that you use, as long as you're not using for fraudulent intent. You can change your name. Yusef's legal name now is Yusef. He's gone by it. He has a history of using that name. He does not have to go to any court and say, change my name to Yusef. He is known as Yusef. He can sue in Yusef and be sued in Yusef and conduct public or private business in the appellation of Yusef, without going to a court. All right, brother. So hopefully that'll help you, brother. We're gonna go on to the next caller. All right. We're gonna go down to 336-9930. 336-9930. Your line is now open. Welcome to High Frequency Radio. Do you have a question, comment, or concern? And give your name as well.
Yes, peace. Peace to the brother. Peace to the guy. This is Energy LR, and I'm calling from Greensboro, North Carolina.
Peace, brother. Welcome.
Yeah, well, thank you. I've waited for this for a very long time, what you brothers, guys are doing, and I totally commend everything and respect everything you're doing to the utmost and to the fullest. Yeah, and I'm out here and by myself pretty much, and I'm out here and I'm in the courts and everything, and the brother was speaking about 1099. And that process, because we all know it's all about taxes in the court, and that pretty much kind of shut them down. But I did the 1099, didn't have the proper information, didn't have the proper terminology, you know, everything, you know, at that time and even now is not right and exact. So I would appreciate it if, you know, the brothers could guide me in a direction. And I don't mind doing the research, doing the homework, because I've been doing it. But, you know, when you're doing this research by yourself, and I do have knowledge.
That's right.
Of course, you know, and I've been, you know, I'm a vegan and everything, so I'm already spiritually connected and know who I am inside and out. And I know everything is not, you know, physical. Everything is spiritual in the mental plane, and that's what I deal with. So I'm not caught up. I'm just, you know, kind of, you know, at a point where I just need someone to just guide me in the right direction. I'll do the homework, the research, and all that. I'm not asking nobody
Beautiful.
To hold my hand or nothing, and I
right.
will give a donation if need be or whatever the case may be. I just want to go in there and do what you brothers are doing, because I'm here by myself pretty much. I have a partner, but, you know, he's doing his thing, and I'm doing my thing, and I can't wait for him and whatever. So I'm out here by myself. So I'm looking to expound this. I want to know what brothers are doing, teaching other people and the nation. That's what it's about. It's about the nation. We all need to come together and work together. So that way, that's the only way we can combat this whole issue and fraud.
That's good, brother. Well, first of all, I want to compliment you, man, and give you honors for your tenacity. You don't appear to be docile in any way, man, and you sound very sagacious in your demeanor. So, first of all, honors to that, and I appreciate the fact that you said that you were willing to go and research the information and utilize it yourself. So we're going to give you that information. The priest is going to go ahead and answer your question and kind of go in on what procedure needs to be followed. I don't know if he'll be able to give you a complete dissertation on that, but I'm sure he'll be able to give you enough information for you to go to the well and be able to fish that information out. Priest, do you have an answer to that question?
He was talking kind of low. What?
Right.
Oh.
He was speaking about what is the procedure to have the court when they're engaged in this commerce, and I don't know what type of a venue he's speaking about, but let's say it's a traffic court, and he wants to know how to fill out the 1099, what to ask for. I believe it's a W-9, a 1099, in order to get the court to pay their taxes on the commercial transaction to which they're involved.
Well, basically, he don't have to fill out nothing. They were supposed to already have it filled out because they the one that got the claim, see? So, therefore, he was supposed to ask the judge, do you have a claim on my estate? And if the judge says no, then you know the prosecutor got a claim on the estate. So he was supposed to ask the prosecutor, since you got a claim on my estate, then you need to produce me the W-2 or W-9 or 1099 OID. Why are you asking for that? He was supposed to pay the taxes. The 1099 OID is for the principal. Who told you that you have authorization and to use my estate, to use my trust? I have not appointed you as my trustee. You see what I'm saying? So he was supposed to fill that 1099 OID out. If they don't have that filled out for him, then he was supposed to remove it to tax court because they are evading and paying taxes. That's the language that you say to them. You know what I'm saying? You're the principal of the trust and questioning. You know, you could say I'm here to turn over the equity of the court for remedy, or I need those tax forms so I got to report this to the IRS. You see people get up off the bench and leave, bro, because they got double books.
Right.
Don't try to figure out how to fill that tax form out. If you got a claim on my estate, then you supposed to fill out the tax form and send in, because remember, the W-2 and the W-9 is dealing with those who are independent contractors who have a corporational business. So since the court is a corporation and that prosecutor works for the state, then he was supposed to fill out those forms, send them in to the IRS, because all money is taxable income. So you're
right,
supposed to report
right.
that to the IRS, mister. That's how
right.
you handle it. I ain't here to give you nothing because there is no money.
Right.
That's right. So in other words, brother, what you have to understand is that, you know, these courts, they have their own individual EIN. Sometimes if you do enough investigation, and USERF can probably support that with a
yeah.
yay, that many times they'll be using a county EIN number. I understand your county is supposed to be nonprofit. So when you go in there and you're paying these traffic tickets, if you're crazy enough to pay them, if you're in a regulatable activity and you are in the occupation of driving,
then you need to go in there and ask for that information, because they have to pay taxes on that $200 ticket that you paid them. They are in commerce. They are taxable. And many times they don't pay those taxes because they get you to pay them. So you go in there writing traffic tickets, and you say, oh, well, your ticket's going to be $140. Okay, great. Let me just go out this W-9. Let me get your EIN number, because I definitely want to report the taxes to the IRS and watch their face. Okay, brother? Did that answer your question?
Let me chime in on that, too. I want to piggyback on that. A 1099 OID is an original issue discount. It is for security, right? And it is because they are securitizing court cases. They have something called a court registry investment system. You need to Google this on the Internet. And they got an example. Somebody actually put this on the Internet and shows how they assign these CUSA numbers to your case number. Your case number is actually tied into a CUSA number. We used to take the case numbers and look them up on Fidelity Mutual website and actually find what trust pool they've been placed into, and they shut all that down, of course. However, just to give the brother something he can study, because they are supposed to fill out those 1099 OIDs, but if they don't, there is something you're supposed to do, because that's why they have a corrected up there, just in case those 1099 OIDs aren't filled out correctly. They have that corrected box up there. All right. Now, there is a document that will explain a lot of this to you. It's called Nature of the Remedy, the 1099 OID. I think it's on Freedom School. It's an old school document, but it's all this information that you see a lot of these cats, they start kicking about these 1099 OIDs and all this stuff. All this information has been out for a very long time. So I'm going to direct you where you can go and read for the information yourself. You should also read Zero Your Account Out. You need to Google those documents. I'll put them in an email today for those who can't find it if you're on my email list. But it's called Nature of the Remedy. I believe it's available at Freedom School. And I got another one called Zero Out Your Account. It's FYI, that's for your education, your edification, for those who are interested in that.
Beautiful, okay. Beautiful. And I also want to add to that, that, brothers, we have to understand that these courts, these traffic courts especially, and this is something that, you know, hopefully on another show, that the priest Elishua will bless us with the president again. I want to go into the traffic court, because our priest Elishua was involved, or at least have pertinent information, firsthand information, about a couple of traffic courts that were shut down. And I read an article not too long ago, I shared with Brother Latif, on a traffic court in Philadelphia that was shut down by the IRS, utilizing the same information the priest Elishua just shared with you. Because the IRS, you know, they have to wait for somebody to complain. And once you fill out that 3949A or you send them that 211 whistleblower form and you say, listen, I asked this court for an EIN number, or I think they might be doing some tax evasion, or I paid a ticket and they didn't want to give me the proper information so I can file my taxes on it. Trust me, these courts were shut down. Philadelphia court resulted in 8 particular judges being sentenced to jail because they were running the ticket scam. It was one particular judge, a melanated man, who was, you know, bragging in the community, and he was running for magistrate again, and he was at a cookout and a picnic, and he was talking to, you know, normal people, Bubba and them that was at the cookout, and he said, listen, I'm taking up some donations, and you can read this article, it's online, just Google, you know, traffic court judges sentenced to jail, Philadelphia traffic court judges sentenced to jail. They were just getting all kind of favors, man. They were getting their grass cut, they were getting trips, and this particular black judge was telling people, I'm passing around a hat, y'all throw some money in there because y'all know y'all going to need me because you're going to get some traffic tickets. This is actually what he said when the Justice Department came in and shut them down and filed charges against them. But another thing about charges is many times we have to understand that many times they will tell us and inform us, these jurists, these judicial officials, that they have immunity, okay? But they never tell the Justice Department when they come in there and put those bracelets on them. They don't yell about that immunity. So you need to study about what immunity they have or they don't have, because they went to jail. But if they had immunity, why did the Justice Department lock them up? They don't have the immunity you think. So when you ask them to identify themselves and they give you a title, you quickly correct them and be like, that's a title, okay? I'm asking for your name, okay? There is your name is not Judge so-and-so. That's a title by which you have some limited immunity in, and that's why you're giving me that name. No, you're injuring me as a person, as an individual. I need to know your name so I can sue you, not your title. Okay, brother? So hopefully that gave you enough information and you'll be able to go execute, brother. All right. All right. We're going to go to the next caller here. Let's see. We're going to go to 407. 407-4777. You're on high frequency radio. Your line is now open. Do you have a question, comment, or concern?
Oh, no. I didn't know I was in the queue.
All right, brother. Peace. Thank you. All right, let's go to 520-520-3066. Your line is now open. Welcome to High Frequency Radio. Do you have a question, comment, or concern?
Yes, I do. Thank you so much, all of you, Noble Moore, for stepping up for the people.
Ma'am.
I am honored and impressed, and I love all of you guys. Here's my question. I am early 60-ish. And
blessings.
I guess I can apply for my Social Security benefits. I want all my shit at once. I want it in a lump sum now. How do I go about doing that, please?
That's a Youssef question.
Put him on the line. Mr. Youssef, help.
First of all, peace and blessings to you, mother. You know, 60 years old. We honor
name.
You. You're a mother.
Thank you.
Right. Youssef, are you there?
Good.
Okay, he must be on hold. Yeah, that's a Youssef question. I'm not real familiar with Social Security. I really don't participate in those benefits, so I wouldn't have an answer, and I definitely don't want to. If the priest feel he can answer that question, Alicia, why you think you can address that question?
Oh, no, you know, that's not my venue. My venue is the court breakneck technique.
All right. Okay, indeed.
Well,
all right,
may
well, sister.
May I ask another question, please, while I have you?
Sure,
First of all, my name is Gail. I'm calling from Arizona Territory, and I am an avid listener. I can be. I have a grandchild who was put up for adoption. He has been adopted by foreign European aliens. I go to sleep with this child on my mind. I wake up with him on my mind. I want my grandson with me. And I don't want to go through any court. I want to go directly to the FBI and tell them to go get my grandson and bring him to me now. How do I do that? Please.
Great. That's good. That's a sort of a loaded question. Why don't you email us at highfrequencyradioblogtalk@gmail.com and let Brother Youssef, he's going to be able to address that question. Child support is something I'm pretty knowledgeable about, but it's going to lead us into a long dissertation that we don't have to know.
Not child support. No.
Well, not child support. I'm sorry. Child custody. That's what I meant to say. Excuse my error. Child custody is something that definitely we need to address, and I'm sure Youssef is going to have a call and had calls on those issues. But we're on the issue of foreclosure and law right now. I'd love to answer that question, Mother Gail, but I'm not able to do so, and that's a question that really you need to. Okay.
I believe in spiritual justice, and I have spoken this
yes, ma'am.
To you. I believe
yes,
I
ma'am.
Will have my grandchild return to me, and I thank you for giving me the opportunity to put this high-frequency vibration out into the universe so that the ancestors, they already know my heart and my desire, and I appreciate
right.
you for allowing me to express this energy and get it out there. Thank you so much. Continue to do the work that you are doing. I will continue to listen. May the Creator bless you all and continue to bless us
well, thank
all.
You.
And may we
all thank you, Mother.
Be- I'm sorry?
That's right. Well, thank you, Mother, and your words were heard. The universe heard it, and the brothers on here heard it, and
thank
we
you.
Understand totally.
Thank you.
Okay.
I appreciate that. Have a
thank
good
you.
Day, guys.
You too. All right. We're going to go to the next caller. We're going to go to 40. Well, I think we went to that caller already. Let's go to 312. I think we went to that one already. All right, brother, you, Alicia, why don't you give us some more information or comments or concern as we close up?
I want to just basically, you know, thank Yahweh for giving me the wisdom, knowledge, and understanding to understand the public law and the private law and to be able to demonstrate it to the world at large on how to free themselves from the fictitious world and come into the world of knowing who they are as the children of Yahweh in the first place. I thank you, brother, for having me on the show. I look forward to being on more shows with you and Brother Yusuf El and the other brother. I look forward to talking to with you all again. I thank all of the listeners. I love all of the listeners for listening to this show. Keep your mind focused. Keep your mind focused on Yahweh, Isaiah 26:3. For those who keep their mind stayed on Yahweh will be in perfect peace and perfect means to understand the seven levels of your mind, body, and soul, and it'll give you perfection, and it keeps you upright. Understand the public law and the private side, and you'll be all right.
Peace, peace, blessings. All right, hold on. Let's see if we can grab one more call here. We got another 30 minutes left on the stream. Let's just see. I don't want to hold the brothers up. We've been on here almost 4 hours, and this is a little bit more extensive than I'm used to in terms of call, but we're trying to squeeze in one more call here from 443 ending in 1257. 443 ending in 1257. You're on High Frequency Radio. Do you have a question, comment, or concern?
Yes, I do. Hi, good afternoon. My name is Pamela, and I'm calling from Maryland. My question is post-foreclosure. In reference to post-foreclosure here in Maryland, they after the sale, you really can't bring up any remedies as far as an audit, once you find out the information after the fact. They're stating a case law, Bates versus Cohen. I just received mine today, ironically, from the Court of Special Appeals, denying my request due to the new information that I found out. And it was based on it's not no procedural irregularities, if you will, and everything is after the sale. So my question, one of my questions is, do you have anything pertaining to that?
Okay. So you went through a foreclosure and post-foreclosure. That means the foreclosure occurred, and somehow you were involved in some litigation and you filed an appeal to a decision granting them the ability to foreclose. Do I understand that correct?
Right. For a decision, not granting them a decision to foreclose, but challenging a foreclosure, if you will. And I appealed their foreclosure decision based on the assignment being after the fact and the audit and other such information. But due to Maryland has a rule that, number one, you can request a jury trial or a hearing, but it's at the judge's discretion. So you're not necessarily obligated to get one, even though you requested one. And secondly, as I stated, this case that they have here in Maryland, anything after the sale is pretty much a done deal. You can't bring anything else up.
Well, I'm not familiar with you not being able to go back and challenge under a charge of a cause of action on wrongful foreclosure. There's never an end to where you can bring an action. If you did appeal a decision, yeah, that appeal is final unless you want to appeal to a higher court, being the appellate court, and then go up to the Supreme Court. So I don't know how exactly you laid out your defenses or offense, depending on whether you're the plaintiff or the defendant, but you can always go back and sue on a wrongful foreclosure action. At a certain amount of time, you know, they have to maintain those records based on the foreclosure. Are you still in possession of the property, or did you lose the property all the way together?
No, I still have possession of the property, and now I just got this letter from the Court of Special Appeals today, and it was an appeal based on what the judgment that was handed down. So my question is, do I now sue for wrongful foreclosure, and can I still bring up the same arguments in that lawsuit?
Well, you have what we call res judicata, and you need to Google that and get the definition. But if it's already been decided, you can't bring those same actions. But it doesn't sound like you were bringing an action for wrongful foreclosure. So you still have the ability to go and sue under wrongful foreclosure. I suggest that you do that. Being that they have the foreclosure, they're going to come and do a dispossessory or eviction. I suggest you have something in the air so that when they do file the eviction or the dispossessory, that you'll be able to consolidate those cases or bring those cases into an action for wrongful foreclosure and maybe even a quiet title action since there's an issue of title. So I suggest you do that and keep something on the offense going to sort of neutralize or ward off any kind of eviction processes that might occur. So, yeah, after an appeal, you can appeal to the Supreme Court. You
okay,
can
so
bring that in if you have federal issues, if you have the FDCPA or the FCRA, sure, you can bring that along with your tort claims into the federal court, but you can also go into the state court and do the same if you're going to litigate state issues, which most foreclosures and title issues is going to lie in the state court jurisdiction. That's where you want to be.
Okay. Okay. Right,
okay.
You so
you're so welcome, and hopefully that answered your question. But you could always email us if you need any further information. Thank you for calling.
Okay.
All right, we're going to wrap up here. I don't want to hold up the gentleman on here. We had a very explosive show. I don't want to water it down at all. You could always reach me at thelawmaster44@gmail.com if you have any questions. If you want to put on the email list, highfrequencyradioblogtalk@gmail.com. I suggest you go there and be on the email list so you can be aware of any events, webinars. As far as the webinar, I will be doing another webinar possibly this week. For those of you that missed my webinar, you truly miss good education and good information. And I, when I conduct webinars, you leave with something. You leave with enforcement. You leave with tangible documentation that you can use and go facilitate. I have received several emails of people that has received consultation and that answers the questions or was the participant in the last webinar that I did who have gotten some monetary gain, who have stopped some foreclosures, who have stopped some debt collectors, who have won some cases already just based on the webinar. My future webinars will not be 7 hours long, unfortunately, but it will be pretty substantial. And as you guys know, I go in on how to win. I don't give a lot of dance around. I give you the pure, genuine nature of your action. And I support that by law and give you the ability and information to be able to go demonstrate and execute. But I thank everybody that was on the call. I thank and give honors in all high regard to my priest, Elishua, Brother Youssef, appreciate you coming in. Brother Latif, your family, we love you. We're going to have another show with you. I thank God for everybody on this show. Thank you for the opportunity. Till next week, next Tuesday, 11 o'clock. We'll see you then. God bless, and we hope that we're uplifting humanity.
Baby, look at me. Mama love you. And I know you ain't no little boy.